This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 778, recorded Sunday, July 5th, 2020. In the Zoom where it happens, this episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by LastPass. Give your IT department a break and supply them with the tools that really protect your business. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to find out how they can help you. And by Barracuda. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at barracuda.com/twit. And by Cashfly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with Cashfly's CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at one-fifth the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com. Enter the code TWIT. It's time for TWIT, 4th of July edition. The show where we get together and talk about the tech news. There wasn't much this week, but we're going to do it anyway. Fortunately, we have a great panel who will fill beautifully. Jason Heiner is here, former editor-in-chief at Tech Republic. He's now editorial director at CNET, one of my favorite people, at Jason Heiner on the Twitter. Hello, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me, Leo. Always a pleasure. Even when there's not much to talk about, we'll have plenty to go through.
How are things in Louisville?
Yeah, great. Of course, Louisville has become part of the epicenter of the world at the moment because of the events with everything that's happened here and that are still happening.
Some big protests there. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And the...
Are they still going on?
More to come. They are still going on, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have protests still in Little Petaluma, but there's only about 5 or 6 people. But it's okay. It's good. It's good. You know, it's just
keeping
the flame alive. Sam Abul-Samad is here from Ypsilanti, Michigan. He is riding on a surfboard with his dog, Boomer. Hello, Sam.
Daisy.
Daisy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
Is that a life jacket Daisy's wearing?
That is a life jacket. When we go out on the paddleboard, she wears a life jacket. She can swim, but just, you know, if we're out in the middle of the lake, I'd rather be safe.
You don't want to have to swim back to shore with a dog under your arm. That would be hard. And are you on a stand-up paddleboard? Is that your thing?
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
It's a lot of fun.
You like
it?
Good
exercise.
Yeah. I always see the people at sunrise, and there's a little steam coming off the lake, and they're paddling around with their dog, Daisy or whatever, and it just looks so peaceful. And I go, thank God I'm here with my cold pizza because I don't want to be out there. It's good to see you, Sam. Welcome. Sam is our car guy from Guidehouse Insights. He's the host of a great car podcast called Wheel Bearings. Hey, look who's here to add some spice to our show.
Yeah.
Shira Lazar, PeaceInside.live. Hi, Shira.
Hi. Happy July 4th weekend.
From beautiful Venice Beach, California, an epicenter of excitement.
Always. Yeah. I mean, a lot going on in Venice, a lot of people having parties without masks. It's really exhilarating.
Oh, I bet. It must be hard being so close to the beach and you don't feel safe going down to the beach.
Well, I usually go during the week and there's actually not a lot of people there. I'll just jog and just, you know, be there alone. But they did close the beaches this weekend.
I saw some people. I think it was more like Manhattan Beach or Huntington Beach sunbathing because they couldn't get to the beach sunbathing on the sidewalk.
Yeah, people will go as close as they can to the beach. So, yeah, there's a lot going on here. I feel like people still think that they're not going to get anything. So they're just continuing to live life as usual because it hasn't, like, even though it's hitting California, we have spikes of COVID. But, like, there's these little bubbles that think they're just, like, immune to it.
Yeah, and I, you know, I kind of understand. It's like, I give up. They're saying I give up. They're saying I know, but I give up. And if I get sick, I get sick.
But yeah, exactly. I'm keeping it safe, you guys. I'm good. Trying to lead by example.
Please, thank you.
Nice.
Please, because I don't want anyone I know to get sick.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Sweet. It's not, that doesn't sound like much fun. It was a very weird 4th of July yesterday, I have to say.
It was.
Yeah.
There was fireworks everywhere last night, you know, all around us. So we were at least
in
our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Daisy was not appreciating that.
No, I bet.
You know, nor were any of the other dogs in the neighborhood. Oh. You know, and I saw videos that were posted this morning of L.A., you know, an aerial video of L.A. with all these fireworks going off everywhere. It was insane.
It just shows if you don't have official fireworks, people will make their own.
Yeah.
And I don't know which is worse, honestly. I watched CNN had a like 3-hour fireworks plus singing thing. And I felt like it was in just this weird dystopian sci-fi novel because everybody's performing from their living room. And and the weird thing is the New York fireworks, the way they did Macy's fireworks, they didn't want people to gather during the fireworks. So they held them at random times over the past couple of weeks. They would just have a pop-up fireworks show and recorded it. And so then what we saw was the Empire State Building, I guess that part was live, was shooting off fireworks, and then videos of the other fireworks. It was, you know, it's not merely that we're quarantining and, you know, and protests. It's not merely all of that stuff. It's also how technology has combined with it to make this very strange. I feel like we're living in a weird future, you know, I feel like we're living in the deep fake future, kind of like all of this is simulated.
What is real?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I mean, Kanye West is running for president. So,
okay,
I mean,
exactly. I rest my case. It's like things like that. And then you told me that the Bitcoin guy.
Yeah, Brock Pierce. I don't know if this is a joke, but I am friends with him on Facebook. And he just announced today, it's like in his feed, that he's running for president. And he has a whole official site. So
it's hard for me to take seriously somebody who wants to be president but couldn't get it together enough to file on time. It's like you're going to have the president, the dog ate my homework president. Like, I'll get around to it. When's election day? Okay, I'll get around.
Yeah. The headline from Cointelegraph.
4 months.
Yeah. The headline from Cointelegraph is Brock Pierce jumps into 2020 U.S. presidential last minute.
Yeah. Because neither he nor Kanye are on any ballots because it's too late. So it's bizarre. It's just bizarre. And I just feel like that's a little bit disqualifying. Maybe it's just me. But if you couldn't figure out how to get together in time to file, Jason?
Realistically, it's all just about getting attention.
Yeah, that's really what's going on.
Who could imagine somebody running for president as a publicity stunt and then actually getting elected?
Well, that's true.
No, that would never happen.
That couldn't happen.
Not in this country.
No, that couldn't
happen.
Yeah,
I will never forget that great movie. It's worth watching with Robert Redford as the candidate, it's called. And he busts his hump. You know, they pick him because he's so good looking and he'd be a perfect candidate. And they go through the whole campaign and everything. And he gets elected. And then he says, and then it's the end of the last line of the movie is, now what? It's like, we worked so hard to get here, but we really needed to think about what we were going to do once we got there. It's a weird world, but I think that the technology salt is making it just weirder. There was an article today in the Sunday New York Times about the Skype shirt. And you know what? When I read it, I go, oh yeah, I do that. Do you keep a shirt like just out of camera range so that when suddenly you've got to do, or a Zoom shirt, maybe they called it, suddenly you've got to do a Zoom call. So you throw it on and, you know, there's nothing below the waist, but no one sees that. You just have a nice, maybe it's a guy thing. Probably a guy thing.
I do. I mean, I've got some shirts in the closet in my office, And, you know, when I get an email, you know, somebody wants to, or a call, somebody wants to do an interview, you know, I just reach in, grab a shirt, put on a clean shirt and, you know, turn on the lights and away we go.
Here's the New York Times Sunday Times piece. The video call is starting. Time to put on your Zoom shirt.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah. Sam, I mean, Sam only has T-shirts for this show. Sam, you know what? He believes in honesty for this show. He does not put on his Zoom shirt. He, you know. So they talk.
I have my Church of the Three Pedals shirt.
Oh, I like that. What are the three pedals?
The gas, brake, and clutch.
Oh, P-E-D-A-L.
As every proper car should have.
Yeah. I am so stupid that, what car was it that had a pause, play, buttons on their pedals? Somebody did. I saw it and I thought, and I didn't get
I had
it.
That on, I have a t-shirt with that.
Yeah. Maybe was that wearing, was it. Maybe I saw your t-shirt. Man. Yeah. I couldn't figure it out. What? Oh, their pedal. Yeah. I get it. Pause, play. Do you have a rewind pedal?
Yeah, that's the brake pedal.
Yeah. So we should rewind into 20. I don't know. What was a good year?
15 was okay.
I don't know.
I feel like 2009 was.
There you go. Year. That's a good year. Let's rewind to 2009. Yeah.
94 was a good year.
2009 was a giant financial crash.
Oh, oops. I was just thinking of.
It wasn't a good year if you were at Shearson Lehman, but it might have been a. Yeah. What, did you graduate from college? Is that what it was?
No. I was thinking about the good old days when we were all just like hanging out
in
SF and partying and on each other's podcasts, like when Twitter was just
starting. It was fun, wasn't it? Those are good days. Maybe 2000, maybe before the crash, like 2006 or 7.
Yes. There you go.
Seven.
Those are the days.
That was a good one.
Two. 7 was a lot of, optimism. That was when people still liked tech. People still thought tech is doing good stuff for us.
Big tech was the future.
Yeah, this is going to be great. Yeah. It's going to save the world.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
Ballywag was around. There was gossip for tech
Ballywag. Jeez. Jeez. I don't know if that's anything to celebrate. Okay.
And Dig.
Windows Vista came out.
Dig.
Yeah. Dig. Was Dig still
Dig
around?
Dig before it went version 4.
Let's not forget the iPhone came out in 2007. That was kind of a water.
2007 is a good year.
It was a watershed year. Yeah.
I remember the Web 2.0 conference in San Francisco, and literally, like, people were just walking around. A lot of people that are now, you know, hidden away in their bunkers, just walking around that show, all, you know, just shooting the breeze in the hallways.
Ellen DeGeneres did the world's most famous selfie at the Oscars. Remember that? And her arm wasn't long enough. So what? Who? Somebody.
Oh yeah, with the Galaxy. It was a Samsung.
It was a Samsung
12 or 13.
Oh, I think it was. Well, I don't. Maybe it was. She hosted.
It was with a Note, I think, wasn't it?
Was it Note? Okay.
Yeah.
I got that one wrong. WWE 23, WrestleMania 23. I'm just looking for the Dow. Closed above 13,000 points. That just shows you how weird this world is. It's now well over 20,000.
Yeah. Well, there was an interesting headline I saw this morning. You know, I get the Medium Daily Digest, you know, of articles I should be reading. And I didn't read the whole thing, but the headline was, you know, that the stock market has become a Ponzi scheme because so many of these insanely highly valued companies, you know, our companies that don't have any dividends, it's all just about the growth in the stock price, you know, which really, you know, in a way, it kind of is like a Ponzi scheme. You know, it's just, you know, waiting for the next sucker to come along and pay you more for the stock you bought.
It doesn't seem related to the fundamentals of a company anymore.
No.
Warren Buffett must be like, what's going on? That was the peak of, in October was the peak of the Dow before the late 2000s recession. Apple released Mac OS 10.5 Leopard. But, you know, the best part of 2007 was the Red Sox winning the World Series. That was pretty darn good. That was good stuff.
That's some kind of sports ball reference?
Sports ball. So Apple is now at Mac OS 11. They've gone to 11. And some interesting, I'm starting to see bloggers like Neil Seibert. This is his post from the first. Apple is pulling away from the competition. Now, I'm ready for you to argue against all that because we've been breathing the Apple reality distortion field for the last couple of weeks after their WWDC a week ago Monday, but 2 weeks ago this coming Monday. But honestly, this move to all Apple hardware, Apple silicon all the way down, and all Apple software seems like something that only a company like Apple could pull off. Now, maybe a number of people wrote me, said, who cares? AMD is going to be great, and I want a Ryzen, and I don't care. But it feels like Apple is firing on all six cylinders right now. And it's an interesting, by the way, they have a six cylinder car, not a four cylinder or eight cylinder right in the middle. I say that because they have accessories, the watch and the pods, the phones, the pads, the laptops, the iMac, and the desktop. Whoa. This is Neil's diagram. He says Apple changed their product strategy prior to last year and the year before. They were a pull strategy. The whole idea was the phone is so dominant, it's just going to drag the rest of the products into success. And then a couple of years ago, they said, no, we're going to fire on all six fronts. We're going to make a Mac Pro. We're going to make a top-of-the-line iMac, top-of-the-line laptop. We're going to make best-in-class tablets. We're going to... And then all of it's supported by services, and it seems to be working from an economic point of view. I don't know if this is a Ponzi scheme too, Sam, but from an economic point of view,
I think the risk, and certainly I wouldn't necessarily include Apple in that Ponzi scheme group because they actually have been paying dividends for the last several years.
Yeah, but so they also are taking their cash different. And buying more stock, so they are pumping their stock price.
Yeah, I mean, in that way, though, they're still returning.
Investors get their money.
Providing returns to their stockholders. Yeah. So whether it's directly as the dividend or doing stock buybacks, either way. But, the risk, I think, with what they're doing, with going all in on Apple Silicon is, they're literally are going all in. There is no plan B. There's no fallback position.
Yes,
if something goes wrong,
it's gutsy.
And we've seen Intel do this in the past. They've gone all in on some technology, and for years, x86, they just kept churning and churning, getting faster and faster, more power efficient, until they stalled. It worked great until it didn't, and at least if you're at least partially relying on other companies, if you're not totally locked into some proprietary technology, you have the opportunity to shift gears if necessary. If things were obviously bad with Intel over the last couple of years, Apple could have gone with AMD, as an alternative, and stuck with the x86 train and at least made progress. They made the decision to not do that and go all in on their silicon designs. And at least in the near term, it looks like that's probably going to work out for them. Based on what we've seen so far, benchmarks of the developer kits, it seems to have great performance, even running, stuff in Rosetta.
On a 2-year-old chip designed for the iPad. Just give it a little memory, some ports, and suddenly you got a computer.
What happens 3 years from now or 4 years from now if suddenly they hit a roadblock with their silicon? Then what do they do?
That's a good question.
They could end up, getting stalled for several years trying to recover from that.
But you kind of have to work to pull a negative outcome out of the air. It could all collapse. But you kind of have to work. Admittedly, there are risks. Nobody's saying there are not risks.
But the thing is, we've seen it happen in the silicon business.
It happened to Intel
numerous times over the last 30 or 40 years.
It's happened to
Intel more than once, with Itanium and more recently with some of their x86 stuff. It happened with AMD. It's happened with every company at some point in time. So there's, a far greater than zero probability that it will happen at some point with Apple. If that does happen, then they don't have an alternative to go to at that point.
I think of this a lot more practically, I guess, because, the reason that they're doing this, and they haven't said we're never using an Intel processor again or AMD or anybody.
Oh, that's a good point. They didn't say that, did they?
No, I think that they'll continue in those high-end machines like those Mac Pros and iMac Pros. Maybe, you know, they'll continue to use Intel Xeon or whatever makes sense for them, I think, for the foreseeable future. Remember that the Mac, I don't think Apple Silicon has anything to do with them sort of dominating the world. I mean, remember their market share in computers is still under 10%. People are buying a lot more Chromebooks. People are still buying a lot more Windows machines than they're buying Macs. But they do need to have a place in that ecosystem, because that's where a lot of the creators are. Those are where a lot of the app makers that fuel the other parts of their ecosystem. And so they need to serve that segment well, but it's not dominating in any sense. It is the most valuable part. It is the most profitable part of the market. And I think they want to serve it well, but it's not a world domination scheme. And they have plenty of other challenges in other parts of their businesses that, you know, that they're having, you know, some struggles in, right? Apple TV Plus has got serious, you know, struggle.
But they don't have to. That doesn't have to succeed for Apple to succeed. That's not a profit center.
For services, for their big bet on services, because they've essentially said services is the future of the company.
If there's any weak point, it's services. I'd agree with you 100%. And that's where it is. And that's still a pull. That's being pulled along by the hardware more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The news is also a struggle.
As the chat room is pointing out, Apple doesn't want to dominate in market share. They want to dominate in profit share, which they do.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
And if you're running a company, that's all you can. You don't need to be 100% of the market.
It's true. And look, they're executing well on the things that they do, but it's not that I think that it's a little overzealous to say, you know, that they're, you know, pulling away from the competition. They have serious competition in a lot of the markets that they're facing, every market that they're facing.
Let me run through challenges. This, because I agree with you. I think it's more complicated, but Neil is very smart. Neil Seibert's a blog above Avalon. Here is... he says this is by no means an all-inclusive list, but here's a list of competitors who are struggling a little bit. Samsung, he says, remains rudderless from a product vision perspective. No clear direction where to go. It's true. They're just throwing spaghetti at the wall. Google, good Lord. Google, he says, continues to prioritize technology over design. They're having all sorts of trouble with hardware, but they're also just confused about their mission. Amazon's massive bet on voice turns out to be the wrong one. The smart speaker space was a mirage because he believes wearables are going to take this, not stationary voice input. And he thinks Apple, as many do, is very well positioned in the wearable space. Microsoft and their Surface, they're merely taking share from their OEMs, not from Apple. And I think Microsoft's heart really isn't in hardware or even operating systems. Microsoft wants to be a cloud business. Mm-hmm. And they don't care if it's Apple or Intel or anything else. It's still going to use their cloud. And there's, you know, their office in the cloud and all of this. Facebook's a competitor when it comes to advertising. There's no question. But that's not Apple's business. In fact, the more Facebook imposes on our privacy, Neil points out, the better it is for Apple. A message sent, he says, through Apple's messages is a message not sent through Facebook. And for a lot of consumers, that's a plus. Snap, Spotify, they seem to kind of dominated this competitive market space. What happened to Intel, though? This was theirs to lose. I mean, you can't blame anybody else.
I can't really get too much into this conversation. As you know, I'm not like...
I know. This is a very geeky conversation.
But I'm taking it in and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of...
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
But don't you think like innovation? I feel like how has Intel innovated?
They haven't.
Or just... Yeah.
Their last attempt at innovation... Well, they had two that were flops. One was, as you mentioned, Sam, Itanium, which turns out they couldn't... It was unobtainium. They couldn't make it work, so they went back to x86. And then, remember, they were trying to do the M-scale processors. They were desperately trying to get into mobile. And another, they couldn't execute. So maybe their whole problem is just they can't...
They actually had an ARM business at one point, which they sold off, the X-scale division.
That's right.
They sold that off.
It's never going anywhere, that ARM stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're... You know, they certainly have had struggles over the last several years, you know, on the the process side. And there was another article I saw earlier today, an interview with a former Intel exec, you know, talking about quality assurance issues that they had, particularly with the Skylake generation of processors. There was a lot of issues with the design of those processors that were getting through Intel's process stream inside and getting to customers, particularly Apple. And apparently that's what triggered Apple to make the decision to go with their own silicon.
Apple was stalled, you know, waiting for Skylake.
Yeah.
They were just stalled.
One interesting new technology that Intel does have that hasn't really gotten a lot of attention yet is something they announced recently. I first heard about it about a year and a half ago at an analyst event they did. It's called Lakefield, which is their hybrid CPU. It's a 3D stacked processor, system on a chip, where they're actually stacking multiple different types of cores vertically on the die. So you've got a relatively small die, and they've got what they call their Foveros technology, which is an interconnect technology. It's a really high-speed interconnect technology between these different processing elements on this chip, you know, so that you can transfer data back and forth between these different processor types. So you've got things like neural engines and, you know, an x86 core and some GPU type cores, and you can mix and match a lot of different things. And it's something that actually has the potential to do some really interesting stuff with it, to get some really high performance out of it in different types of applications. That's only just coming to market now. They just actually announced it a couple of weeks ago, even though this is something they've been working on for quite a few years.
It's kind of interesting because Intel's innovation has all occurred because they couldn't get clock speeds fast enough on single CPUs, single chips. Mm-hmm. And so they did multi-chips. They're doing stacking. Optane was a stacked memory. They're trying to eke more performance by increasing the depth and count, I wonder if there was something went wrong in there.
Remember, Intel had innovation struggles for years, and they really got bailed out by their small team in Israel that came up with the dual core, just much more practical, much more really innovative, and that bailed them out for a while. But you know, this split with Apple, even though I don't think it's a permanent split, I don't think it's a 100%.
That's split. Interesting. I think you're the only guy I've seen say that. I thought everybody just said, oh yeah, Apple said we'll have a few more Intel products coming out, but they.
Yeah.
So you think they may not abandon Intel? That's an interesting take on it.
I don't. Just because, look, I think that the Intel thing was inevitable. When Apple started making its own chips, this was inevitable because when Apple has to wait on a partner like Intel, they had Macs they wanted to launch. They couldn't launch them because Intel was late with their processors, as you referred to. And also, as you know, Shear talked about, in innovation, Apple just has a team that they've been out innovating Intel, and that Johnny Cerugi and his team at Apple has just delivered again and again and again with the iPhone and the iPad. It's just inevitable that they're like, look, we're making these chips. There's no reason these couldn't run a computer, especially a laptop. I think they will replace every Intel chip on a laptop 100%. I think some of these other devices, I wouldn't be surprised if they hedge a little bit and they still, if it makes sense, will run or at least make them compatible. You have the choice of having an Apple chip or an Intel chip.
That's an interesting
on some of those.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. Shira, did you wear the Snapchat spectacles? You had those.
Oh, God. No, I mean, I did. Was a joke.
Really?
I mean, I it was cute, but then it's just, it's not something, it's like one of those trends, the fads, and you do it once or like you do it for a month.
Yeah.
It's not like...
I was going through my Snapchat videos, and there was a whole bunch of them from whenever those came out because I kept pressing the button, and there was
circular.
There was just this. Yeah, you remember this? They had cameras on.
It brought up a lot of privacy issues. Like
it was annoying,
strange. If you were around someone that you didn't trust, and they had them on, you felt like they were just going to be spying on you and just posting all this stuff with you.
So they've released they've released their third version of these.
God. They keep trying. Did it even go? Did the first version go well? Like, I don't know why they keep trying.
This is like the Ringo Starr version. Look at the
went great for about 3 or 4 weeks until they actually had some sufficient supply.
You remember those pop-up stores? And yeah. I actually got mine on eBay. Somebody went to the pop-up store in New York because you had to time it and you had to know when they were and bought it. And I bought it from them. But I was proud. I only spent like 20% of her list price because I wanted to see what this was all about. The reason I ask is these aren't it. Google Glass wasn't it. But I think There, and Seibert talks a little bit about this too. There is some credible reason to think we're going to be entering the age of wearables in the next maybe 3 to 5 years. And the most sensible thing would be a pair of glasses. Everybody seems to agree. All the rumors are that Apple will actually ship its first pair of glasses in the next couple of years. And I ask you, Shira, because I thought if anybody would wear these, it would be you.
Yes. I like the idea because it does get to be a lot of work when you have to document stuff and you have to keep on putting your phone up. And if there was something that was a bit more seamless that you didn't have to like do the work, that would help. But I just don't see it really, like, I don't see it being normalized. Or unless like that's just us like old school people talking, and then like the younger people, that's just how they would want to, you know, have their tech like as on them in that way. I just don't know. I could see it being really great for like protests, like things like that, or content creation, or festivals or events, you know, or if you're walking or if you're a travel, you know, travel person and you want to document that and you don't want to always have to like go to your phone or your camera. But then if we're just hanging, you know, what?
I was just going to say, you know, certainly things like events, you know, you're just saying, or protests, you know, I mean, that would be amazing right now with all these protests, you know, and a lot of what we're seeing, a lot of what's triggered these protests, you know, is people documenting it with their phones.
True.
And if you could make that process more seamless, like you said, you know, reduce that friction, you know, then it would potentially put a lot more pressure on anybody that's doing something wrong to stop.
I don't think, though, that's what
actually.
I mean, I don't think Apple wants to make protest spectacles, you know.
But, you know, if I think about it, if I'm a woman and I'm walking, I wear my spectacles as I'm walking or jogging if anything happens. But, you know, if I'm out on a date, am I going to want to wear those?
I'm your Tinder date. I just wear these because I'm worried about you being a creep. You don't mind, do you? So I'm wearing the first. This is the first generation. And, you know, I think Snap made a point of making the camera have a big yellow circle around it, because otherwise you might not see it, which is even more annoying.
Future ones are probably not going to have it, right? This is one of those, like, best quality, worst quality things. That's something my wife says a lot, right? A person's best quality is also often their worst quality, you know?
Your wife is smart. Wow, I have to think about that. I'm going to spend some time thinking about that.
Because it's like if your best quality is like you're very driven and you're very, you know, ambitious and you're very sort of organized. But that's also probably the thing that you're going to drive some people crazy with too, right?
Right.
Like the person just don't quit. They never let up kind of thing, right? But it's true about this too. The best quality is that you could, you know, stealthily record the police when they are doing something they shouldn't. It's that you could, you know, catch you know, people doing things that maybe we're breaking the law or we're doing something unjust. But at the same time, if everybody's walking around, then all of a sudden you also lose some trust to the point what Shira was saying, because you never know who's actually recording you or taking photos of you. Then at the same time, that's a little creepy. And now you're going to be a lot less trustful of people when you're in the public, which I think is somewhat inevitable in the world that we live in. But, you know, that's part of sort of the best quality. The best thing about them is you could take video and nobody's watching. The worst thing is you could take video and nobody knows you are.
The issue is not a lot of people are using Snapchat. I mean, younger people are.
Right.
And so I think with this, like, if people start using this more, would they start using Snapchat more? Or if they were smart, they would they integrate it in some way where you can post it to your Snapchat and then post it everywhere else as well at the same time?
I feel like I read somewhere that the rumor is that Apple's first glasses would not have a camera per se. They would have infrared sensing, LiDAR style 3D sensing. But really the point of the glasses is not to, as these snap glasses were, to record the world around you, not just like a camera phone that's always on your face, but really as a more an informational heads-up display. There's a company that makes such a thing called North. We did a review some, how long ago was Anthony's review of the Focals? It might have been as long as almost a year ago, the Focals 1. North has been working on Focals 2. It was just announced this week. Google bought them. So I think what's shaping up is a little bit of a Silicon Valley battle over the next generation of computing platforms. And I do think they'll be wearables. I don't think they'll be wearables by themselves. I think they'll be connected to your smartphone. A lot of the computing power will be on the smartphone. But I think that you'll be able to, you know, what are AirPods, especially AirPods Pro, but a smart device in your ear?
Yeah.
So...
Go ahead, Sarah.
I feel like Apple, if they did it, they have the best possibility to win because if you think about it, you're listening to stuff. Like, I think it would be really cool if you had your glasses and you look down, like if you had a food or, you know, ingredients and you could see and it's connected to your phone and then you could like see how many, you know, calories
exactly.
are good or bad. Yeah. Or the temperature check outside. Right. Like you just look outside and it says what the temperature is. Or
you're on a Zoom call and it says he wore that shirt in the last 32 calls you had with him. That would be good. You would like
but,
to know.
You know
that.
A lot of what you just described, sure, you know, depends on having a camera to be able to see and classify the environment around you. And that seems like it kind of runs totally counter to
well, we both Apple's, want
just
you know,
as, privacy.
Just as Jason said, we want it, we don't want it. Right.
Yeah. You know, so can you do something that lives up to what Apple talks about with privacy and actually make it useful? That's the challenge.
Yeah.
What Apple's going to try to sell you on if they do this is it will be on device. It will be encrypted.
Yes.
We don't have any look at
yes.
it. You know,
yes.
trust us because we don't sell your data for a living. Right. Cause from our reporting, you know, we have a number of people that do this. Our reporting is that Apple and Facebook are the ones that are the farthest ahead on this, like the next generation smart glasses.
Who are you going to trust with that? Facebook or Apple?
Sure, it's not Facebook.
Exactly.
Yeah. yeah. Right?
And then Google knows that they're a little behind. And so they bought
That's
North.
Why they bought because North. They, yeah.
They've got to catch up to Apple and Facebook. Amazon wants to be there too, but they're still sort of finding their way in hardware. But Amazon, Google, Facebook, they all make money off your data, right? Apple's going to try to make the argument
exactly.
that they don't. I'd say the thing to watch for as to how close we are is if Apple this fall, if they announce that they're getting in the camera business, like they're going to do a smart doorbell or a smart camera, and they're going to sell this in the same way, right? They're going to say, trust us because it's all on device. We don't sell your data. We don't want your data. We don't even know what your data is. It's all encrypted. If they start to do that this fall, then know that they're probably getting pretty close with glasses too, right? That they're already sort of priming the pump. Like if they get in the camera business, which is one of the things that's sort of one of the open questions, do they want to do this? Because they haven't been very happy with how well like smart home companies are working with their ecosystem HomeKit enabled devices. So they might make their own. But they obviously, we ran a report last year that, you know, some sources that we have that we know that they are working on this. They have a group. There have been mixed reports on that. But, you know, this is something that's happening for sure. And,
yeah.
and I think there are going to be some really interesting things that happen because of it. And I think we have to expect this idea of the government is already sort of wanting to bear down on big tech. And stuff like this is definitely a trigger moment for something, you know, for I think a lot of governments, especially the EU, but also the U.S. government is looking so much closer at big tech.
I want to take a little break, but I do want to come back to this conversation because I think it's very interesting. And a couple of weeks ago, Mark Gurman, who is very well connected, rumor guy at Bloomberg, had some interesting, very concrete rumors about Apple's AR glasses. And their plans. I hope they don't look like the ones I'm wearing right now. this was from a different time, wasn't it? When Snap could do these spectacles. It was a more innocent time.
They're looking cool. Time. Are you going to wear them the whole show?
Yeah, I think I'm going to wear them now. What do you think? Should I, Shira?
I mean, you look kind of cool. It's very risky business.
It is.
But modern day risky business.
I'm not wearing any pants either, and I've got white socks on. So I'm just saying, I've got Tom Cruise on my mind. Our show, Shira Lazar is here from pizzainside.me. No, peaceinside.live. I'm not going to start a competing podcast all about eating pizza for breakfast. I promise.
Hey, do what you got to do.
Tell us about peaceinside.live.
Yeah, it's a platform around mindfulness, meditation, and movement. And we offer donation-based live Zoom sessions with facilitators around the world, workshops on the weekends, community discussions with leaders in the space as well.
Seven days a week, you do this. You work hard.
Yeah, making all this more accessible to people and taking down the barriers for entry around this space, because more and more, as we're seeing working from home with all this uncertainty, how do you find peace inside, literally and figuratively?
So needed.
And
right,
we're also working with brands and corporations. If you have a company that is looking to bring this to your employees or teams during this time, or your consumers, we create custom virtual sessions for meetings as well as retreats.
I love how entrepreneurial you are, Shira. Seriously. You always have something you're working
on. I mean, I joke around, like, you know, there's some people that constantly work like at companies, go from one big company to another. And I just like create ideas constantly.
You build the company around you. Yeah. That's so smart. Yeah, no, I think I admire that so much. I just really admire your energy. And the fact that as soon as a quarantine happened, you immediately got ideas. I know what we need to do next. I think that's great.
Yeah. We started this 2.5 months ago. So yeah, we've had over 2,000 people through our live sessions. And now we're just figuring out the next stage as we all look at the future of work and self-care and mental health and all that. Yeah.
I do. We'll talk a little more about that too, because I think we're seeing already the evolution of work, of shopping, of everything. Mm-hmm. This is not going to stop when quarantine stops. There's going to be some changes made. There's going to... Yeah. Also with us, it's great to have Sam Abul. Sam, we're going to talk a lot about, we started talking about chips, but cars are getting smarter. And I want to talk about you. You talked a little bit about the new Ford F-150 last week on the radio show. I want to talk a little bit more about the technology that's getting into cars these days. It's mind-boggling. Sam,
sure, yeah,
it's always welcome on the show.
There's a lot of amazing tech. Yeah. And you know, it's the thing is, most people really think it's, you know, a modern thing, you know, a very recent thing, you know, because they associate it all with Tesla. But we've been putting computers in cars since the 1970s.
Oh, yeah. They're just getting a lot smarter.
Yeah.
And they're getting off the CAN bus, I hope.
Oh, yeah. Mm. They're going to Ethernet and other networking technologies.
Also with us, the man who got me elected president. I hear that Kanye's looking to get you on his team, Jason Heiner. I'm president of the Internet. Let's put that. By the way, that was the last election, so I guess it's for life.
Yeah, it was for life. You know, the way all good,
all good
leaderships are.
Yeah, and. Unlike most leaderships, it has no power, no influence. Nobody even knows that I'm president of the Internet, but I am. So thank you.
On the DL. On the DL. That was like 2008 or wasn't that like?
That was such a good year, 2008. I'm telling you. Well, 2007. Yeah. That I for should have thrown that into my rundown.
That's right.
Leo got elected to the president. I also had the most Twitter followers in 2007. 5,000. Wow.
Remember that? I remember the battle between you and Kevin Rose for a while. Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Shira, wave your magic wand, whatever it is, and let's go back. 2007.
Oh, God.
That's when Twit really started taking off. I mean, I want to go back. Let's go back.
All of us were dating each other and hooking up before everyone got married and had kids.
I kind of missed that part.
Well, you weren't part of that.
Were we dating and hooking up? I must have missed that part.
It was a lot of it was like a crazy time of just people partying, the Kevin Roses and Pete Cashmore.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Pete Cashmore.
You know, and all of us were just like in our 20s and single and partying together, like Internet Week New York and in SF.
Yes.
And,
yeah, it was a party. Yeah. Yeah. Pete was so good looking, man.
He was a good looking guy.
Fatter, mashable. He had model good looks and a Scottish brogue to go with it.
And he was very smart, obviously.
Smart and shy, painfully shy. What is PETA? Your assignment, should you choose to accept it, Shira Lazar, What the hell is Pete Cashmore doing?
Wait, follow back. Wait, I wasn't following him. He was following me.
Oh.
His account is private.
Oh, so now you have to ask. You have to beg now.
I just asked. I have no shame.
Oh, he'll say yes. And then Alexis Ohanian, now he's like
oh, my God, Alexis, can we talk about that? Yeah. He'd come on the show and what's trending. And he is now bulked up. He is like a man.
Hold it. Because I want to talk about the manliness of Alexis Ohanian in just a bit. But first, a word from our sponsor. That's a tease. Now, you know, the only problem with doing good teases on podcasts, people just fast forward through the ad. It's not like live radio, Shira. You see on your live show, on your radio show that you do every day?
First over Alexis Ohanian. No, he is married.
Yeah, I know he's married. He's very married to Serena Williams, who could kick your ass.
He married up.
She don't mess with Alexis. Serena, come over to your house. And she's tough. Anyway, let's talk some more about that in a bit. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. You know we're in the LastPass studio. Thank God. The last bastion, the quarantined LastPass studio. I'm the only one who can use this. This is my studio now, baby. I'm the captain of the LastPass studio now. LastPass is something we started using years ago, back in probably 2007. Actually, probably very close to that, actually. I've been using it for more than 10 years, so yeah. It was my password manager of choice for years, then started using the business version of Twit. And now I'm glad, you know, as we send everybody home. This is tough. Your IT department has a very big job. There's more devices. There's more applications. And your workforce is remote. That means all new threats, regulations, strong security has gotten very complex. But LastPass is there to help your IT department with strong security that your employees will love because it's easy to use. Easy to use and easy to manage, which is normally a kind of a contradiction. LastPass makes you secure at every entry point. From shadow IT to apps to mobile and cloud services, their access solutions give you visibility and control over every access point to your organization. And really, if you think about it, you've sent your employees home with the keys to the kingdom. They have your bank accounts. They have your website. They have logins to your databases, your customer records. They got it all. So you got to make sure they can stay secure. LastPass unifies access and authentication. Their single sign-on, for instance, is so cool. Employees love it because no more passwords. They just say yes on their phone. They're in. But your IT department also loves it because you get a simple and integrated view across all access and authentication tasks. They know who is accessing what, when, and where. You can also increase security without impacting productivity. I know you want that. Don't slow down your employees. And it kind of goes hand in hand with making them happy. They love it. Don't leave your business exposed. Make your employees happy. Make password security effortless. It's not just passwords, but it also, still, we're stuck. Most of the sites, most of the places, most of the apps these days still use passwords, and they're the entryways into businesses. That's your weak link, so make sure you secure it. No more sticky notes. They also make it easy to share. Employees can share passwords easily, securely. 256-bit AES encryption, the best you can get. It is never, your passwords are never available, unencrypted anywhere but on your device. LastPass does not have access to the password. The password's never sent. It's just yours. And I think that's so important. It's your. I consider it my secure enclave on every device, iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, Linux, every browser. That's where I put my most important information, notes, my SSH logins, things like that. Secure your business. Give your IT department the tools to keep your business safe. Visit lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help you and your business stay productive and secure no matter where your employees are. LastPass.com/twit. So have you been doing while I've been talking? Shira has been looking up Alexis Ohanian, buffed up, following his Instagram. Did he approve you? Did he accept you yet? Yeah.
What, Pete Cashmore?
Cashmore, no, man.
I wonder if Pete will accept me while I'm on the show, and then we could really dive into
We could really celebrate. Yeah.
I've known Alexis for years, and I do follow him on social media.
Somebody calling you? Is that Pete? Is Pete calling you? Did he come over? Did he say, "Oh, hi, Shira. I've been waiting for you to follow me."
Yes, he's calling me from across the country. Yeah. But yeah, so let's go back to Alexis, because I've known him, and that guy has made, talk about a transformation.
So he founded, and I've interviewed him. I know him too, not as well as you do, but I've interviewed him a couple of times. He founded Reddit. Yeah. He and Steve Huffman. Huffman's still at Reddit as CEO. Alexis has kind of left Reddit. In fact, most recently, during the Black Lives Matter protests, he said, I'm giving up my board seat on one condition. Yeah. You replace it with a black board member. And they did. In fact, yep. A really good new board member. So yeah. Alexis is pretty hip. He's pretty with it. He's done very well for himself. And then he married Serena.
Yep. He did well.
I know, because I see him, like, you watch the tennis matches. And you know how they show the tennis player playing, and then they'll show the spouse in the stands. There's Alexis sitting in the stands going.
It's amazing.
It's like, for those of us who knew him as a geeky guy, it's amazing. Yep. All right. So anything else to say? He's buffed up?
He's looking hot. I mean, I must say, I think men age well, but then also you add in like working out and then making money and doing good for the world. It's a good look.
He is doing good for the world. Here's a picture of him and Serena. Okay, he still looks, you know what, honestly, in this picture, Serena looks cool, calm, collected. He looks like, I can't believe it.
Oh, God.
I can't believe it. I'm here. Oh, my God. I'm standing next to Serena Williams. I'm so excited. Doesn't he? I
mean, he goes to the Vanity Fair party.
Oh, I know. Like, he's made it. Yeah.
The galas in New York, all those big, fancy galas.
Yep. He actually, according to Business Insider, once stood up in class to tell his friends he hated tennis.
Aw. Times are changing.
Well, you can hate the game and not hate the players.
Yeah. I've heard that. I think you're supposed to hate the game, not the player. But I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Or hate the player, not the game. I don't remember.
No. Hate the game, not the player.
Hate the game, not the player. Okay. Very nicely done, Sam. 23-time Grand Slam tennis champion Serena Williams. That's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. He thought tennis was a joke of a sport. He would even change the channel if it was on.
Who reported about this? How did they find out?
People are entitled to change their minds too, right? Like, we've all changed our minds about a lot of things since we were in the fourth or in the 10th grade or something.
CBS News has a series called Note to Self, and in which he reads, like, I guess people read their, you know, like, childhood notes or journal or something like that. Yeah. He did a class assignment in fourth grade in which he said, I hate tennis. How do we get on this? I forgot. Stop. We'll stop right
now. I don't even know. We were talking
about Pete Cashmore.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
2007.
This is what happens when you have me on the show.
No, you're great. We all get a little
go down a
distracted.
Rabbit hole. Yeah, exactly.
Distracted. So we were talking about some sort of augmented reality thing. And I think that Mark Gurman had the big scoop on that, the AR glasses in the Bloomberg. I'm going to see if I can find that.
Don't you think of when you think of glasses, like the Black Mirror episode where you can look at people? Be there like Instagram and following and everything.
Yes. And then
if
your social score goes down, your life is ruined by even one point. So this scoop came out a couple of weeks ago. Gurman's well connected, often considered to be, you know, when he says something, it's considered to be pretty accurate. Apple's been building a team since late 2015. Now 1,000 engineers working on two products aimed, according to Gurman, at upending the VR and AR segments. There's a device, codename N301, that would be an all-encompassing digital experience for gaming and consuming content. And then the real device, and that's presumably coming out next year. The real device, though, would be the N421, a lightweight pair of glasses that he expects, let me see, in a few years, like 2022. And those would be completely augmented reality. You think that's going to be the next battleground? You know, one thing we learned from Apple's silicon announcement is that they had been putting the pieces of this together in ways that didn't immediately become clear. And then as soon as they said it, it was like, oh, that's why, for instance, the iPad Pro is so overpowered. You had to have this superpower chip. Oh, I get it. Oh, that's why you redesigned, you know, the way the iPhone worked so that it would be. That's, I mean, all of this stuff came together. That's why you're focused on service, all this stuff. I think you can also say that we can see the pieces of the puzzle starting to come together. I don't want to be caught out this time, so I'm looking ahead. So I'm looking at it, and for instance, the LiDAR camera on the new iPad Pro, it's the only new feature on the iPad Pro from one year to the next, is this LiDAR camera. It's not that, you know, it's, you know, hold it up and the thing. And then at WWDC, they talk a lot about their new AR kit. And it's starting to look like maybe they are doing this.
Yeah. It's for developers to build apps, right? So now they've got hardware in the hands of people. Yeah. They've got the software, the developer kit that's going to teach them how to do it, right? And so, you know, because all of the, you know, those things, Google Glass failed because there wasn't enough cool stuff to do with it. Snap Glasses failed because there was really only one thing to do with it, right? And so for this to succeed, it needs to have some really killer apps that are going to make people, or really ultimately needs to have one killer app. And the thing is you don't know what
you
that
don't know
one
what it
is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Apple's have a bunch smart of different enough. Ones. Apple's smart enough to know that they can't do it all by themselves. So there was this video, and we talked a little bit about this on MacBreak Weekly, AR Kit 4, which is the next AR kit that Apple showed off this week at WWDC. And of course, this is a developer, so there's things, there's lots of code, but there are some examples in here. Street view, you know, the ability to map space, scene geometry with, this was an interesting image. Let's see if I can get back to that, which was a heat map kind of looking picture, but really instead of measuring thermals, it's depth sensing. So the red is the farthest, the blue, light blue is the closest. And so they're learning not just the 3D geometry. They're really learning a lot about the depth of this. And this is powered by what? The LiDAR scanner on the iPad Pro. Sam, does that come from automotive technologies? Certainly it's
LiDAR
part of
actually
self-driving,
started,
right?
Yeah, it originally was created before self-driving, but it's really, you know, automated driving development that has made LiDAR take off as a technology. And it's why, you know, there's like 70 some startups, you know, over the last decade that have popped up, you know, developing various kinds of LiDAR. But, you know, the key to it is with LiDAR, you can do something you can't really do with cameras, which is that depth measurement, you know, actually measuring the distance to those objects. You can estimate it from a 2D image, but it's never going to be as accurate as you can get with 3D. And that's why, you know, when they added the LiDAR to the iPad, now all of a sudden you have much more robust capability to place objects and, you know, to know where surfaces are in that field of view and place objects in that field of view relative to those surfaces and anchor them.
Can you give us the 1 minute LiDAR technology? Because there's terms like time of flight. Is it like radar? What is it doing?
Yeah, I mean, it works a similar principle to radar. Radar uses radio waves. LiDAR uses light waves, a laser beam. And basically what most LiDARs do, and the type that's used by Apple on the iPad, it sends out pulses, laser pulses, light pulses that are reflected back off of objects. And, you know, knowing the speed of light, each one of those pulses is encoded with a timestamp, basically. And when it reflects back, you can measure how long it took, and you can figure out exactly the distance to that object. And then there's also another type that's called frequency modulated continuous wave LiDAR, which uses Doppler effect on that.
Oh, interesting.
And that's actually the way most radar works, is using that Doppler effect.
That makes more sense if you're moving with regard to the object you're bouncing the thing off of, right?
Yeah. The advantage that has is you know every return you get, you can measure an instantaneous velocity shift of that object.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas with time of flight, you can measure the speed to that object, but then you can measure the distance. But then on subsequent pulses, by looking at where that object has moved, you can then calculate the speed from that. But it, so it takes you a little bit longer. There's a little bit of lag in that, and it's not quite as accurate. So that's, you know, some companies are doing that continuous wave frequency modulated LIDAR now.
So in the early days of LIDAR, some of the issue, the big issue was the expense. I remember there were LIDAR units that cars were using. They were $11,000 per unit.
The early ones, those first Velodynes that you saw on
the spinning,
like the DARPA Grand Challenge cars and the early Google cars, those were about $80,000 each.
Wow.
Yeah. And now they're getting down. You can buy, you know, there's a bunch of different LIDAR sensors that you can buy now for anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 for a 360-degree LIDAR.
Still expensive, though, right?
Yeah, but there's also, you know, solid-state ones that are getting down to the sub-$1,000 level. And in the next couple of years, you'll get down close to $100.
And you know, Apple's, if it's, is it really LIDAR on the iPad? I mean, are they just using that too?
Yeah, it's LIDAR.
So it's got to cost less than $100.
Laser.
Because the iPad itself is only, you know, $900.
Right. And it, you know, it looks like what they're doing is a very basic solid state LIDAR. It's a low power, probably 905 nanometer laser. It's just silicon. There's no moving parts to it. It's what we call a flash LIDAR, where, you know, it flashes the scene, you know, with a scan of dots and gets the returns off of those. It's not scanned. There's no beam steering. You know, it's fixed, very low, short range, probably, you know, no more than 5 to 7 meters.
Is that the same as the Face ID camera in Apple's phones?
It's a similar concept. And I would guess it's probably based on the same technology as what they're doing. I'm not sure exactly what frequency they're using on Face ID, but that one might actually be a different – that might be a higher frequency. That might be a 1550 nanometer, because the thing about 905 nanometer, there's two basic frequencies of LIDAR that are used. There's 905 and 1550. 905 is not eye safe, so if you have a strong enough beam – and get right in somebody's eyes, it could cause eye damage.
Yikes, that's
where
not good.
1550 nanometer will not cause eye damage, so they can use more powerful lasers and get longer range.
Right.
So it's probably a very low power 905 nanometer that they're using for Face ID and for the iPad LIDAR, just because if it's the power is low enough, it's not going to cause any damage.
So the fact that this appeared in the iPad Pro, the most recent release, tells you two things. One, as you said, Apple is trying to get developers to try this, to use it, to start writing stuff around it, to give them the capability. So they're pushing ARKit 4 and all of that. But the other one is it's a manufacturing thing. The more that this is what happened with the iPhone in 2007, they released it, and suddenly they started making custom machines. Apple did for the Chinese manufacturers. They started really building this expertise, and the prices of the components dropped and dropped and dropped. The interesting side benefit is there are all these industries that popped up. I think Shira started her own company all around. I don't know. I'm just joking. But
I'm wondering how people use this, like regular people.
Drones. Well, if you use a drone, for instance, the technology that the iPhone made cheap and widely available in Chinese factories made drones, quadcopters, possible.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think what Apple's trying to do with LIDAR is build that manufacturing base so that they can make these cheaper and cheaper, better and better over time. You agree, Sam? Is that what happens?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely part of it. And I would not be at all surprised if what they're incorporating for the LIDAR and the iPad and, you know, probably in some upcoming devices has evolved directly out of the work that Apple's been doing on their automated driving program. You know, I have no doubt that they've been, you know, developing their own sensors. You know, the vehicles
so
that are out on the road.
Maybe the Apple car rumor was really just misguided because they were making a LIDAR and people thought it must be for a car.
No, you know, no. I think that they actually were developing their own automated driving system. I don't think that they were ever all that serious about developing a complete vehicle.
Right.
I think they were focused on the automated driving part because I think that's probably where they think the real money is, rather, because building cars is a low margin business. You know?
Right.
But, you know, if you build an automated driving system and a service around that, now all of a sudden you have the potential for some money if you can get it to work. And, you know, I think given that that has taken a lot longer to get to maturity, they probably took some of the ideas developed out of that program, brought them into other parts of the company, you know, into these mobile devices to use, you know, and, you know, when it first came out that they were working on automated driving, you know, my first thought was, okay, well, you know, they bought PrimeSense, you know, the company that developed the original Microsoft Kinect. You know, they're doing their own silicon. They're doing, you know, they're doing all kinds of things with software. It makes sense for them to develop all of this full stack, the hardware and the software in-house, running on their own compute platform. And if they can get that to work, it gives them a real potential advantage over some of the competitors. But there's that big if of if you can get it to work, which so far has been a real challenge for everybody.
That's going to be the real – you could say Apple Silicon is a risky move. That's less risky. They've been making Apple Silicon since 2007. They kind of understand the business. The real risky move and the move that you have to do because you've got to find a successor to the iPhone – is this move into wearables. I don't think they're doing cars, but the move into wearables. I'm sorry, I cut you off. You wanted to say something, Jason?
I was just going to say there also is there's another end game here. One of the end games is making glasses that are going to be one of the next great consumer devices.
They need the next iPhone, yeah.
Right. There are challenges with that. But also, remember, one of the things that a lot of people overlooked with Google was like how important maps were, right? Yeah. Mapping the world for the digital, sort of the next phase of the digital revolution was critically important. It's the same with LiDAR. So LiDAR, putting LiDAR in the hands of people to map the world for them, although, you know, these they could do similar to what we've seen with maps and send, essentially people in these vehicles out to do it. But they need it on a more detailed level. So whoever gets this technology and puts it in the hands of their users and they map the world for us in LiDAR, that is going to be absolutely critical to, and just to name two things, the autonomous vehicles and robots and automation. Because when you have the world mapped to that sort of 3D model level, then all of a sudden you have this incredibly valuable data set that's like probably more valuable than sitting on top of oil. Right? Because so many people are going to want to build businesses off of that data, that mapping data from LiDAR. And so that's another one of the end games too, right? Is because Apple doesn't typically, you know, get into that business, but you can bet Google, Facebook, Amazon, others, absolutely, Microsoft, absolutely want a piece of that.
What about VR experiences? Because I was thinking, like, with this whole quarantine thing and people being stuck inside and tourism, like, this would this be able to be used to draw people into different cities or you know, tourist destinations? Yeah. I feel like this could be huge.
I mean, and actually, that's a conversation I want to have next, which is how the stuff we're doing today with mixed success globally, COVID-19 related, like quarantining, how it's going to definitely, very much change the landscape in a way that it's going to hasten some stuff along. It's going to kill some stuff that wouldn't have happened if it weren't for that. Here's, by the way, another interesting use of LiDAR. It is being used. We had them on the new screensavers a couple of years ago. It is being used to map ancient ruins. This is a Mayan city that is invisible, but LiDAR can actually take the forest canopy out and reveal the layout of the city below it. And they're doing a lot of this now in the Amazon forest and other places, starting to see stuff that we couldn't see before thanks to LiDAR. So it's a really interesting
Archaeology.
And that's the sort of thing you can do with, you know, the frequency modulated continuous wave LiDAR, you know, the higher power, much higher resolution than anything we're using for cars or you know, iPads. You can go through and do that sort of thing, fly a drone or an aircraft over it, map that, And then you can actually filter out, you know, things like the trees, you know, filter out, you know, a lot of things, you know, by comparing frame by frame and seeing what has moved, you know, seeing where everything is, and you can actually remove a lot of things. And there's a lot of potential, because one of the challenges LiDAR's had is, you know, when you have a reflection off of a snowflake or a raindrop, you know, with some of that early generation LiDAR, you know, it couldn't see through rain, basically.
Not so useful, yeah.
No, but now some of these newer generations of LiDAR actually can filter that stuff out fairly reliably.
Yeah.
You know, the comment, too, about sort of the effects of some of these things on where we're at and where we go from here reminds me of a tweet that somebody that I followed on Twitter, and I recently interviewed Ruha Benjamin, who I believe has been on Twit too. I think you've interviewed her on Twit. She wrote the book Race After Technology.
Yeah.
Which is really a tremendously in-depth and amazing look at the alternate narrative of technology, especially on people of color, and how it has reinforced and worsened many of the challenges that we have in terms of in terms of race, in terms of social social justice. So she's amazing, but she wrote that she had a talk. There was she tweeted about this, that there was a talk that she was going to be doing, and they said, oh, and by the way, we're working on possibly doing it as a hologram.
Wow,
which was amazing.
Wow.
That's where we're at, right? Yeah. Is that we're all of a sudden there are a lot of events that are not going to happen. CES is obviously a big question mark. As we look into next year, you know, Broadway just announced they're essentially shut down through next March. We have all kinds of things we might have normally done that we're not going to be doing. And so we're having to think of different ways. And this is going to, I think, is a point that you all sort of mentioned, we're likely going to accelerate some trends that were already happening.
Right.
This COVID-19, pandemic is likely to accelerate in virtual meetings, in all kinds of things, in terms of events, in terms of shopping, in terms of education. Last week, I interviewed Ruha recently, and that video is up. But talking about her book and her narrative, this alternate narrative on technology. But I also just interviewed last week Sal Khan from Khan Academy about what does all of this mean for education. And team is doing a lot of that. And so, there's a lot of things in motion right now and a lot of things that are accelerating. And we're trying to deal with the acceleration.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Everything is changing. I feel like sometimes that we were just waxing nostalgic about 2007. Even in the 13 years since then, the train we're riding's gotten faster and faster and faster. And it is a weird experience. And I mean, we cover technology, so we're like the people strapped to the front of the train watching stuff come at us fast. I don't know about you, but I feel like it's accelerating. It is. I know it's accelerating. And it's getting harder and harder to hold on to, that ideas come and then whoosh, there's another one. And it kind of, for me, it helps me understand a little bit why there is definitely a trend in this country. And it's a trend certainly that the president has kind of tapped into. Slow. When is it going too fast? Can we go back to 1853? I mean, my nostalgia from 2007 is nothing compared to these people. Can we go back to before the Civil War? Because it's, and of course, those are imaginary times. That nostalgia for those times eliminates all the negatives and only highlights the golden glow. It's like watching Gone with the Wind. What a wonderful time that was. But I think that that's kind of what's going on in this country, and it's accelerating. As technology and life starts to get faster and faster, more and more of us just want to say, no, slow it down. But I don't think you can. Can you slow it down, Shira?
Listen, it's not slowing down. I think you have a choice as to how fast you want to go, because you can't control what's happening around you. And so I think this is where, like, the ultimate individual choice comes into play, that, like, you know, you choose in and then you choose out while everything is going crazy around you and there's a lot of chaos. So I think that we're going to see a movement of people, disconnecting and just going in the other direction.
I can't take
Eastern
no more.
I actually don't even think it's about, you know, before the Civil War. I think it's like Eastern philosophy, like Buddhism.
It's caveman. And let's go back to pre-technology.
Well, yeah. I mean, I see a lot of people just connecting with themselves and saying, like, I don't want to be inside on Zoom all day or on FaceTime and being anti-tech. And like, they're actually, because it's like, what are you fighting for in the end? Are you fighting just to keep up with things? Or are you fighting for happiness? And a lot of us are realizing it's like, there's more that we want in this life. We want for our children. And I think when you're young, you get excited about all this because you're all about
all you know is change
side of you.
All you know is change when you're little.
Exactly. And as you get older, you're just kind of like, whoa, like this isn't really helping me with my process here because it just gets overwhelming. And then you almost do nothing and you don't.
I think that's a sensible way. What you've got is a sensible way, a cognitive way that isn't. There's also a way to say, no, I'm going to. I don't hear you. That's a different thing than what you're talking about. You're talking about life skills that help you.
Conscious, intentional choice.
Yes.
Like, and I think we need to be aware of burnout. I think that burnout comes not just from doing too much and having too much on our plate, but consuming too much. Like when you're taking in so much, whether it be information, auditory, visually, and like, I do think our minds can't handle it.
Yeah. Hop on the Luddite train. It's calm down
slow
internally.
Down and think, slow down and think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get, you know, we need
get
to
sucked into
we
it.
Need to teach everybody to, you know, not worry about FOMO. You know, don't jump on every new thing that comes along.
Yeah.
You know, take the time to understand, you know, try to understand what it is before you adopt a new technology.
Oh, and, there's no time for that, Sam. There's no time for that. What are you talking about?
Well, and to another thing that Shira was talking about, you know, is how much we take in, you know, how much we absorb. You know, I know, you know, I personally consciously try to limit how much, you know, I consume a lot of media, a lot of content every day.
That's our job, right?
Well, in the process of doing my job, you know, in my research, you know, I'm looking at a lot of things, but what I consciously try to constrain is how much, like, politics, you know, I know what's going on. I take in enough to be aware of what's going on, but I don't obsess over it and consume every story about
Isn't
Donald Trump
risk, though, or
Elon Musk and their latest tweets.
Isn't there a risk, know? Though, that you're going to?
No.
No? Okay.
Because if it's important, you're going to hear
find out
about it.
Yeah.
You don't have to read every single tweet.
There's
you don't
a great
have to,
phrase that's yeah. come into currency. And sure, I know you're with it and hip with the kids. Doom scrolling.
What? I've not heard of this.
Oh, this is my favorite new phrase, doom scrolling. It's when you're up late at night and you're on Twitter and you can't stop doom scrolling. Oh. And you feel it draining every bit of joy out of
you. Or Instagram. That happens on Instagram
too. Yeah. Doom scrolling.
Someone said in the chat they're surprised that I hadn't heard about.
I know. I thought for sure. I mean, you've got the Snapchat glasses. You should know about doom. No, it's a difficult world we're living in, and you have to do whatever you can. But I think the mistake would be to say, "Oh, let's just go back in time." First of all, you can't. Second.
For sure. You can never go backwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can change what you're doing now and adapt and, you know, try to make it better.
Yeah.
I think it's about figuring out what's good for you. Like, what is working in your life, what is not, and then like organizing your life around that. Because like that's you have to figure out what you're fighting for. So if you're fighting for, you know, freedom or truth or happiness, like what does that actually mean in terms of things you do? And what are those things that are not bringing you that? And that becomes just like a clear way to compartmentalize.
But also I would say that be here now means don't worry about the future, but also don't want to live in the past. Just be here now, right?
Yeah. Ram Dass. And actually that's one of my mantras I do when I feel like I'm going into a neurotic spiral, which happens whether you're on social media or, I don't know, you're waiting for that email to come through or you feel like you're, there's just too much going on. I just breathe in and say, I am here now. And I'm okay. That's and it. What are you grateful for? So I think it's we're in a time of merging like modern life with once again, like I look at like Eastern philosophies, right. like Buddhism and all that, which I'm a big fan of.
Yes. Let's take a little break.
Yeah, I spent 2 years.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, Jason, you can't start that sentence and not finish it.
Yeah, my fellow vegan here.
You spent 2 years doing what? What, Heiner?
No, I 2 years, I quit Facebook and Instagram, and I just spent more time reading. You know, starting to doing and meditation. And also the other thing that I did. So when it started with reading and actually just calling and talking to people on the phone and trying to have a little bit at the time before social distancing, you know, some face-to-face, spending more time with people. And
your internet is degrading right now. I don't know if that's because it doesn't want you to be here now.
Oh.
Or
maybe. Oh man.
I got to take a break. We'll fix that right now while I am taking a break. Jason Heiner, CNET, wonderful fella. Sam Abul Samid, Wheel Bearing Podcast, wonderful fella. Great gal, Shira Lazar. I sound like Joe Biden right about now, don't I? She's a great gal, that Shira Lazar with the peace inside me. And I love peaceinside.live. Peaceinside.live. All right. Our show today brought to you by a big fish with sharp teeth, Barracuda. No, not that Barracuda. Barracuda, the provider of cloud-enabled enterprise-grade security solutions for every business to protect email, to protect your networks, to protect data, to protect applications. Everybody in business knows the name Barracuda. They're just the best. Just the best. Well, let me talk a little bit about how Barracuda can help you right now with your Office 365 inbox. Suddenly, as we're all working from home, you have dozens, hundreds, thousands of employees working remotely. Every one of them is getting tons of email every day. That makes them vulnerable because 91% of all cyber attacks start in an email. That's the vast majority. Spear phishing, ransomware, account takeover, conversation hijacking. You multiply that by the number of employees, by the number of emails, one click on one wrong email can cost the company big time. Money, customers, reputation. Barracuda researchers, they actually have a great blog at their website, barracuda.com/twit. That's where I found this stat. They've seen a steady increase in the number of coronavirus-related spear phishing attacks since the beginning of the year. In fact, since the end of February, 667% spike. 600, it's incredible. The bad guys are just jumping on this. It's an opportunity for them. They know employees are at home, and they know they can get them with emails impersonating the World Health Organization or the CDC or, you know, and offering, for instance, information to help them stay healthy. They use domain spoofing so it looks real. How smart is your staff? Are they going to fall for that? Are you going to fall for that? You need Barracuda Total Email Protection. It includes all-in-one email security. It also includes backup and archiving, which many businesses have to do for legal reasons. You've got to have, you know, it depends on the business, but sometimes as much as 7 years worth of emails, you've got to archive that stuff. It'll help you with that. They have AI-based protection from spear phishing and account takeover and email compromise. You need AI because attackers are using different techniques every minute. They're constantly evolving, so your protection has to evolve. They also have a great automated incident response that gives you options so you can quickly and efficiently address attacks. And we know that, by the way. The faster you address an attack, the faster it gets fixed, the easier it is to fix. You wait a couple of minutes and it could be curtains. So this fast incident response is really important. And of course, you got to keep your employees aware. They offer security awareness training as well to educate your workforce. They are, after all, the first line of defense and attacks. So what can you do? You can go to barracuda.com/twit right now and uncover the threats hiding in your inbox. You can get a secure, free email threat scan of your Office 365 account right now. Don't be scared to push that button. You got to know, right? Ignorance is not bliss. Find out. You might be shocked to learn, but fortunately, Barracuda's got some solutions. Barracuda.com/twit. Find out what horrible things are lurking in your inbox. Look under that rock. Barracuda.com/twit. Barracuda, your journey secured. A great company to have on your team. You gotta have some support doing this. It's tough. Somebody in the chat room recommended this book by Cal Newport. I'm not familiar with it. Digital Minimalism. Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. He said it's really, the chat room guy said it's really good. The New York Times says he's the Marie Kondo of technology. I might have to try that. Oh, sure, you're muted. There you go. Sorry, we muted you.
Of course you did. Yes. Tao of Pooh is also a good one. Someone mentioned that's a good way to get into Tao.
I read that when I was a kid. That's been around for ages.
Look at you. Impressive.
Yeah, I mean, hasn't that? That's been around for a long time.
Yeah, it's classic.
Yeah, Benjamin Hoff. Yeah, it came out in 1983. Wait a minute. No. Winnie the Pooh's 90 years old. The Tao of Pooh isn't quite that old. No, it's almost 40 years old, though. That's cool. That's really cool. And when I say a kid, I mean your age, Shira. Anything that happened before my 40s is when I was a kid, basically. It's depressing, but it's true. Let's see. What should we talk about right now? A couple more Apple stories, and we'll move on. One of the things Apple also released is betas of not only Mac OS 11, Big Sur, but Mac iOS 14. And one of the fascinating things that's happened is how much we've learned about apps on our phones that are spying on us. iOS 14 has a lot more information when you install an app, when you're using an app, about what it's doing. And Apple's really pioneered this. You know, you've seen, and it was so effective, the Maps warning. Did you know that Facebook has checked your location 3 times in the last 24 hours? Here's what it knows. Do you want it to keep doing that? I think that was huge. Now they're going to start showing right up front, giving you an opportunity to turn off the ID for advertisers. Apple, like most devices, gives you a unique ID, which, unless you turn it off, it will be shared with advertisers. It's a way that they can know if you've seen their ad. They can verify whether their ad worked, that kind of thing. Google has one, too, called GAID, G-A-I-D. Apple's identifier for advertisers helps mobile marketers attribute ad spend. But there's some real concern in the world, because it will be now, whenever you install an app, here it is, you will see this right at the beginning. This app would like permission to track you across apps and websites. Your data will be used to deliver personalized ads to you. Now, you can say allow tracking, but advertisers are now extremely concerned. This setting's always been on the iPhone, but it's never been put forward like this, that people are going to say, no, ask that app not to track me. Concerning?
Yeah.
Good news for privacy advocates, right? A lot of marketers are very upset about IDFA, and
I've increasingly found so-called personalized advertising or targeted advertising to be less and less useful, over the years, to the point where these days, half the ads I get are for stuff I've already bought.
Yeah, they're really good at recommending stuff you already bought,
especially Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon. People like you also bought this. Yeah, I know, because I bought it. How many grills can one guy buy? I mean, I don't need any more. That's enough. Thank you.
You need at least one more.
I got my vacuum. I have 3 now. This is way too many. But I can cook meat in any way you would like. I know you guys are vegans, but Sam and I, we'll make some brisket.
I'm still craving a good vegan burger right now.
You're never going to get one. That's all made up, that impossible burger. You don't know what's in that. That's all sorts of weird stuff. You like it? Do you like the Impossible?
I like it, but there's other brands now that are doing really well.
It's better, though, than the old days When I was a kid in my 30s, where they would make vegan burgers out of peas and lentils and weird, and it tasted like that. Tasted like you were eating
at least
a nut
now
burger.
They look and taste like a and feel burger. Like a burger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting hungry.
I'm sorry. Sure. That's so mean. If you want to, you know what? Take your laptop with you. If you want to start dinner, go right ahead. I feel like I know more about you, Shira.
Now I'm hungry.
You post all this stuff on Instagram. I feel like I know what you're eating. I know what you're doing. Yeah. It's great. I love it.
When Impossible or Beyond Meats or somebody can finally give me, you know, an authentic seeming, you know, rack of spare ribs or pork shoulder or a brisket, you know, that has no meat in it, I'm all in. I'll do it. I'll go for it.
I know it's bad for the environment and it's bad for me. I do know that. But I know it's not nice to the animals. I do know that. Help me, Shira.
Honestly, for me, it was similar. I watched What the Health, that documentary a few years ago.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And then I tried the vegan
diet. Forks over knives.
And then I ended up, but I was already moving. This is so not a discussion for Twit, but whatever. I was already moving away from red meat. Like I was actually having stomach issues every time
I
ate red meat.
It's bad for you.
Steak,
yeah.
I couldn't even physically eat it. Like my body was not letting me eat it. So I did vegan and then I went to pescatarian. And then basically when COVID started, just as everything felt like it was falling apart, we're just like not treating animals or the earth well. I just decided to cut everything out.
Oh, this is new. I didn't know that.
Well, I've been going back and forth on it for a few years. And this is the first time I went like really all in. Like I used to be a bit more open to cheese and eggs specifically. And I've just cut everything out.
Can't give up. Jason, you've been a vegan your whole life, right?
No. Since 2010. So 10 years.
So you look back at 2007 with lust as well.
No, you know, the funny thing is So I've had really bad environmental allergies my whole life. And when we moved to Louisville, I like Louisville's a great city. Louisville's,
home of the Derby and the mud pie. And man.
Yeah. I mean,
you could just go over the river and get some real chili in Cincinnati. I mean, you're living the life.
But, you know, I travel a lot, but Louisville's a great place to come back to. But I got to a point when we were here for a couple of years where I was like, my allergies were so bad and I was on a lot of medicines. And I had a friend that we were both mostly vegetarian. It was a college friend of mine that was from Louisville. And when I moved to Louisville, we sort of reconnected. And he had an ulcer. So we were both kind of mostly vegetarian since college. We'd eat chicken or fish or that once in a while. But he had an ulcer and so he had to go off all dairy and he felt so much better. And he told me, he's like, you should go vegan. He said, that's what you should do. You're having so much trouble with all this allergy. And he really wanted me to stay in Louisville because he's a good friend. And I was like, that's fine for you. But look, my allergies are so severe. Like it's not going to make any difference at all for me. And so finally I got so desperate. I was like, I will try anything. I will do anything if it would help me feel better. And I started going vegan and all of a sudden, and I used to have these like really debilitating headaches. And when I traveled, I would never eat meat, similar to what Shara is saying, like my stomach, the worst thing is you're going to give a presentation or have a meeting or something and your guts are killing you. And so, I was, you know, already kind of on that, path. And then when I did this, when I got so desperate and I tried it, all of a sudden I wasn't getting headaches all the time.
Wow,
I was able to like go off all of my medicine, my allergy medicine. I had like 5 allergy medicines, went off all of it. And all of a sudden I was like, this is what it feels like to be normal. I my energy, I had so much more energy. I wasn't, feeling sort of sick all the time. And I felt better. You know, I was in my 30s. I was like, I feel better than I felt in my 20s because, wow. You know, I just didn't realize that all of this was making me feel, you know, so bad. So that's just my case. I probably had some sensitivity, especially to like dairy and meat. I have AB plus blood type, which is the newest blood type.
Yeah, you need to know your blood type, too.
That's a bad one. That's the one that gets COVID right away.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's the newest blood type. It's only been around because
what did people do before AB?
B and A.
What do you mean it's new? It's been around since there've been humans, I would presume.
No. Since humans started mixing between different regions. No. Yeah, it's only been around since humans from different regions started mixing. So
you have a blood type that didn't exist till when?
Yeah, it's the new. I can't remember the exact.
It's AB plus. Like, you know, is that weird?
AB positive. Yeah,
positive
because. So all four of my grandparents are different ethnicities. And so that's partly why I have, you know, AB positive, because the, you know, genetics sort of, they come together and they literally have to make a new blood type because they're like, we can't, you know, the DNA sort of,
less
you know, right?
4% of the population has AB positive. But here's some good news. Yeah. You're known as the universal recipient because you can get blood cells from all blood types. Guess what? I'm O positive. I'm the universal donor.
Yeah, you're the one everybody wants their blood from.
If you ever want any of my blood, Jason, I'm here for you. Actually, you could take blood from anybody, right?
That's right. Exactly.
I don't know how we got into this.
Sorry, Dan. That was my fault.
No, it's good. I like it. No, I asked. Awesome. I started it.
We're educating people. Maybe there'll be some people that will shift and learn more because of this.
It's true. The chat room said to me, you're an alien, Jason. Just admit
that's
it. It's true.
That's so weird. I didn't know there was like a new blood type, like never before seen a new blood type. Who knew?
Until more, there was more migration of different human beings. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mixing of different, you know, sort of ethnic groups. That's when it came about.
I had no idea. So the other thing, Apple's iOS.
Oh my God.
I feel like the nerd at the party is like, so, and then let's talk more about iOS because I'm not done. The latest privacy revelation in iOS, I guess it also will let you know if something's snooping your clipboard and a bunch of apps. First, it started with TikTok. So it's actually our good friend from Emojipedia, Jeremy Bruges, tweeted, every time I type in another app, Apple's iOS 14 is saying, oh, TikTok just looked at your clipboard. Oh. And it turns out it's not just TikTok. In fact, I think LinkedIn just apologized saying, yeah, our app does that too, but that's a bug and we're going to fix that. I don't know if it's a bug or people are just getting busted now. 56 apps, I think, at last count.
Well, apparently LinkedIn, it was actually grabbing every key press.
Oh, great.
So
that must be a bug.
Every single key press, was checking the
LinkedIn. Yeah, so LinkedIn was a keystroke logger.
Actually, was a bug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But again, I think this is great. You got to praise Apple because they're exposing bad behavior, whether it's intentional or accidental. They're exposing bad behavior, and people who use iPhones will now know. As soon as iOS 14 comes out this fall, they'll now know what's going on. Good thing. Apple also doing, I think, the right thing. This is a little more controversial. They declined. So the World Wide Web Consortium proposes new APIs all the time for browsers to support. Apple has declined 16 proposals due to privacy concerns in Safari. This is, Steve Gibson went through this list on Tuesday on Security Now. It's kind of mind-boggling. This is not going to be in Safari, but I think Chrome browsers, maybe. The vast majority of these only implemented in Chromium-based browsers, not so many in Mozilla. So Web Bluetooth allows a website to connect to a nearby Bluetooth LE device.
Wow. What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? Web MIDI allows it to enumerate. This is a website. Enumerate, manipulate, and access MIDI devices. A website can now use the magnetometer in your phone to access data about the local magnetic field around you. There's an NFC API, a memory API. You can the browser can actually, you can query the browser as a website, and it will tell you how much device memory there is. Network information, battery status, ambient light sensor. You go to a website, the website, you say, could you turn on the lights? It's a little dark in here. This is crazy stuff. Proximity sensor. This is all built into Chrome. But Apple is not going to put this in here. Also, a user idle detection. So a website can say, hey, I see you're not watching. Look at me. The real concern Apple has is not so much these individual capabilities, but this is a very widespread. You know, now that the IDFA is people are going to be turning that off. People use these APIs to query the browser about a variety of aspects of this user. And it doesn't take very many, half dozen, before you get a unique fingerprint. And they could say, well, I know it's Shira because, you know, these are the Bluetooth devices I can see. This is how much memory she has, et cetera, et cetera. They could put it all together, and it's a way to fingerprint you in a very sneaky way.
It is. This is all digital fingerprinting stuff because all of these companies, you know, in the internet ecosystem that rely on advertising, which is huge business, right? They know that the cookies are coming to an end, that, you know, users are not okay with it. And so it's essentially they're looking for all of these little bits of data that they can collect and that they can do to pinpoint you without a cookie, right? Yep. Without, and so it is very consumer friendly of Apple to push back against these things because these are those things that slide in under the radar. You know, they make their way into technology like cookies did, and people not, you know, can the average consumer not understanding how, you know, anti-consumer and anti-privacy it is until it's too late. And so I don't think this will stop it because, you know, Safari is only a certain percentage of the population. But it is, you know, Apple can do it because they're, you know, it's something they can control. You know, Chrome, I have to think, will adopt all of these things and it will it'll essentially replace the cookie with these digital fingerprinting techniques.
Because Google's advertiser friendly. That's their business.
For sure.
On the other hand, I'm going to make the case for it because what we are seeing increasingly is websites and web apps that are as powerful as desktop apps. And there is definitely a trend towards that. We've talked a lot about the move towards thin client computing and progressive web apps and the idea that, you know, why would we need a Twit app if we could make the site a progressive web app that has the capabilities of an app? That you could even, you know, save a bookmark on the desktop, and even if you're offline, it would continue to work. That would be a good thing, and I think there's a strong case for that. That's kind of where the world is moving. So I think
it's the dream. I don't know. It's the dream.
I don't think that W3C
is a bunch of PWAs on my phone, including the, you know, Twitter. I don't have the Twitter app installed on my phone.
It's an excellent PWA.
I just have their PWA on my home screen.
And I don't think the W3C is introducing these APIs with an attempt to make fingerprinting possible. By the way, there's a lot of fingerprinting going on already. For instance, in this ZDNet article about this, they point out the do not track setting is often used to fingerprint because it doesn't do anything, but if you've got it on, that's one more piece of information I have about you. Support for custom fonts. If I can list the fonts you have installed, I know I can pretty much uniquely identify you again and again and again. These are all things that I think are useful. So who's to blame about this? I think this is ad tech is to blame because I think these technologies would be nice to have. It'd be nice to have more capabilities for websites in your browser.
So what's the fine line then?
I don't know.
The line between something that helps you is productive for the people like, you know, you and then your consumers, your viewers, but then doesn't encroach on privacy or steal necessarily.
I think rather than blocking these, what Apple should do is sandbox them. There's got to be a way that you can keep these technologies in the browser without letting them access the outside world somehow. I'm not sure, though. You know, I don't know.
It's another one of these like best quality, worst quality things where it does all these good things. They're going to allow you to not install an app because once you install that app, all of a sudden you've given up a ton of permissions, right, to a company.
Yeah, but think about it. That we do that all the time. I mean, the computing is an act of trust. You don't know what the source. You can't, for most programs, you can't see the source code. You don't know what a program's doing.
I'm saying an app versus the web app, right? The web app, you can maintain a little more control. And some of these features would help companies build better progressive web apps that are that's a good thing. That's going to do sort of what we want.
Right.
But at the same time, when you do that, now all of a sudden you've enabled this tracking at the web browser level, or at least you've enabled bad actors, right, or even maybe somewhat bad actors to have the ability to use that and exploit that to track you in ways that you're not completely comfortable with.
I'm very aware, as you must be, of the tension between privacy on the one hand for consumers and the need to monetize on the other hand, whether it's for a website, yeah, or a podcast. When we run our ads, the nice thing about RSS podcasts, and one of the reasons they're probably dying, is because RSS doesn't give us any information about our user. They're just downloading. We see the hit to the website, but all that gives us is an IP address, which we don't preserve and don't use. But advertisers want to know more about, they ask me all the time, well, how do I know that the last ad in the show was heard? I don't know. How do you know that the ad in a magazine was read? I don't know. How do you know the guy's not making a sandwich during your $1 billion football commercial? I don't know.
that's so stupid because like billboards, like yeah, 20 center on billboards still. And yeah, it's like, how do you know they're looking up from their car? Like, it's just
but
so,
you know why they do this? Because Facebook and Google can tell them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so you and I and everybody else here, we're all competing against these behemoths who don't mind spying on you in every way possible.
Which is why the media relies on that too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yep. It's why they swept in and ate out 80% of the market. And between the two of them,
instantly,
they own 80% of the advertising, of all advertising everywhere, is now controlled by two companies.
Put yourself in the advertiser's shoes. If you can tell me, if I can say, you know, I just want 53-year-old men living in the New York City metro, you can buy that on Facebook. And it's cheap, by the way.
Yes.
And then I was going to say, and media doesn't have the money to build out their own tech, and the companies that do are huge companies. And then so it's like, how are smaller publishers supposed to do that? Which is why then they build all their media or campaigns or audience on social. So it's a really weird relationship.
I have to say though,
yeah,
Apple's virtue comes because they couldn't get their own ad tech working. Right?
For sure.
They had iAds. They wanted to do this, but it failed.
They crashed and burned, and they said, you know what? We're going to turn this into our best feature.
Let's flip.
It's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm very glad Apple exists and does kind of fight for the end user. But it's a larger issue. You know, you're stripping out capabilities in browsers. You're stripping out the ability of sites like your old Tech Republic to monetize. This is happening in podcasting too. That's the reason Joe Rogan was worth $100 million to Spotify. And note that $100 million payday came with Spotify exclusivity. That you can't, you know, he took his shows will no longer be on YouTube, nor will they be downloadable via RSS. You'll have to use the Spotify app to listen to Joe Rogan. Why do you think that is? Because Spotify app knows exactly where you are, who you are, what you're doing. And it's not that they need to sell ads against it. They can, but they have that information. That's valuable information.
Well, they do want to figure out what else to, like, what else to put in front of you that you'll listen to.
Yeah, it's valuable for them, too. That's right, the content. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The upside, though, is, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but for wheel bearings, very few people listen to it in Spotify.
I know.
Almost nobody.
But
almost
don't you worry about the day when all the podcast, like if they can get all the big podcast, they bought Gimlet, they got Joe Rogan, the day will come when all of the podcast advertising money will be going to Spotify, just as 80% of it is now going to Facebook and Google.
But are there ads on Spotify? If you have Spotify Premium, there's no ads.
There's no ads. So they get you either way. Either you listen to the free one and then their ads, or you pay them not to have ads. And people,
so they're banking more on you paying.
Yeah,
but they're banking you on paying for the monthly versus it being, you know, it like on Apple, it's just a different model.
They make a lot. They have what, 90 million paid subscribers? They're doing all right.
Yeah.
I think that's 90 million total.
Total? Oh, okay.
Free and paid. Yeah.
I wonder how many they have of that is paid. What percentage?
I mean, I was using, I have a funny story about free Spotify. Someone just posted, I still use the free Spotify. I was too, until I was, you know, single and dating, and I'd be hanging out with a guy at my place and like a romantic music would be on and then an ad would pop up in the middle.
If you want a better car, come see Cal. If you want to find your car, come see Cal. That really puts a little damper on the makeout session.
I'm getting Spotify Premium tomorrow.
Okay, get this. As of the first quarter of 2020, Spotify had 130 million premium subscribers worldwide.
Wow.
So they're doing okay. So you and I had the old number, the way old number. 124. Let's see. They gained 6 million paid subscribers during COVID. So they're doing all right. They're doing fine. They've spent almost $1 billion now on podcasts.
They can afford to send me a check for $100 million. Yeah, I'll
take
it.
I'll take it. Do I have to smoke pot with Elon Musk to do it? I don't know. I don't.
Well, frankly, I think that's the only way I'd want to be in a room with Elon.
Only tolerable way to be in a room with Elon.
Actually, yeah. I'm going to say something because we are trying something on some of our shows. There are some of our shows, older shows, long tail shows like Triangulation, and then shows like Twig. That don't have a lot of advertising. Twig, for instance, is chronically short on advertising. And we can't get anybody to buy it. I don't know why. But they just don't like the name. But advertisers are funny. We talked to an advertiser the other day that said, oh, we don't want to buy an ad on Twig because it's on Sunday. What? It's on Sunday. We don't want to. We only want to advertise on shows during the week. Okay.
It's like what?
They clearly don't get
you know, 60 Minutes is on Sunday, too. Is it a bad day? Wonderful World of Color that Walt Disney was on. Sunday's the number one TV viewing day. Anyway.
NFL football also.
NFL you know, Sunday. Yeah, who would want to buy
that? That's weird. That's like reminds you know me when I do ads on Instagram or like sponsor deals. They'll be like, can you put it up during the week? And I'm like, well, what if the weekend is better? For my engagement, like, no, we'd rather drink.
Yeah, they're so
like,
strange. So advertisers are strange. Anyway, we are going to try something, and I wanted to actually tell people this because we started doing it called direct insertion ads. And the way it works, we go through a company called Megaphone. And the way it works, if a show doesn't have an ad, we aren't going to do more ads. We only do one ad per half hour on any show. But if a show like Twig has one or two ads instead of three, the normal we will put a little beacon, a little tone in that ad. And if Megaphone can sell it, they'll insert an ad there. And it's only in audio. It's not on the video because they don't have the technology to do that. So we're going to try that. But I have to say the reason that works is because at least in that case, an advertiser can buy a geolocated ad. They don't know anything about the people, but they could say, look, I only want to buy the U.S., you know, when we sell 30% of our audience is outside the U.S., they could say, I only want to buy the U.S. or I only want to buy the West Coast or I only want to buy Nebraska or whatever. So we're going to see how that works. It's an experiment.
I heard one of those on Twig this week. Yeah.
What did you hear? What was the ad? Because it's different ads.
I have no idea. I can't remember. It was a very short ad. It seemed like it was, you know, no more than 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, might have even been as short as 15 seconds.
It's like the way it's been for years in other media. Yeah. It's just never been on podcasts that way.
Yeah, and I do not remember what it was because
it's very effective. You can see
host read ads are. Seriously, they are much more effective.
I agree.
You know, especially when you incorporate something, you know, like incorporate your own experience into it, you know, which you guys do. And I know many other shows that I listen to do that, you know, and it sinks in a lot more.
I wouldn't be drinking mushroom coffee if it weren't for Joe Rogan. No, I don't drink mushroom coffee.
Do you do that? I was like, oh, no. Do you do that?
No.
Although, I do actually. I microdosed today. This was my microdose tincture.
Oh, of what? LSD? Of
shroom microdose. I'm a proponent of shrooms.
Psilocybin?
Yeah.
Magic mushrooms? But how micro is it? So you're tripping right now? Are you tripping balls right now?
It can help with depression, anxiety. Oh.
Yeah, it's used for PTSD and stuff.
Yeah, I actually interviewed the founder of MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies.
Is it legal?
It is for certain people.
When I do this, does it look like there's my fingers or there's...
No, it's not that. Microdose is so small. It's like you don't feel it. It's just like taking a Tylenol.
Oh, I'll be very honest. I took a lot of acid when I was young. And I think it explains a lot. Steve Jobs always said that the reason Bill Gates was no good and Microsoft because he never took acid. Steve Jobs was a big proponent of LSD. I am not. I'm not. Kids, be cool. Stay
you
in
heard
school.
Tim Ferriss is like putting a lot of money into John Hopkins University, their research.
Everybody's into microdosing in Silicon Valley now.
Yeah, FDA is soon going to. They're on like the final steps of approving it, but it would be for medicinal
ketamine.
Use. So
ketamine is used for depression.
Yeah, ketamine too. Yeah. All these things, and MDMA as well.
So when you say microdose.
Microdose is
like
just
if
like
you drank
a
the whole bottle, would you trip?
I mean, you would have to have like maybe half a gram or 1 gram. Oh, okay. Even a trip, like.
You'd have to have a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, you'd have to have a lot. Okay. Like 3 grams. If you do a shroom journey, usually it's like at least 3 grams. I mean, I'm not a huge expert, but I'm definitely.
You sound like you are. I hate to say it. You know, if you want a shroom journey. It could be arranged.
I do. How much have we prescribed drugs to people like opioid addiction?
Oh yeah. I'd rather you microdose that than take OxyContin during the show.
Exactly, and it's also like people get addicted to Adderall or like how many other things?
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like those things are not good for you. This is natural. It's nature's best.
It's a mushroom. It's a different kind of mushroom than the one I was talking about.
Someone said I sound like
it's not
a
lion's mane.
Stuff like mushrooms and cannabis.
It's not about
recreational
use.
That stuff has some real value.
You're riding the dragon. That's a different mushroom altogether. No, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us. That's very brave of you.
Hey, I am living the authentic life. I'm all about speaking my truth. So.
Yeah. And you find it helpful.
Yeah, I found it. I had really eye-opening experiences.
Nice. I loved psychedelics when I was young. I mean, really young.
Yeah, and these things, you're not seeing things. You're just processing your emotions and traumas in a different way.
Right.
I mean, sometimes.
So can you feel it? Do you feel it? Do you know that? Like,
no, not right now. No, like for me, usually when I take a microdose, I definitely have more focus and less anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice. Well, that's for me, a cup of coffee. Actually, coffee makes you anxious.
I still have coffee too, but yeah, you can get anxiety and jittery.
It makes me very anxious.
That.
Yeah.
It gives me the shakes. Yeah, caffeine does.
Yeah, I think this is right now, this is kind of the little secret of Silicon Valley. Microdosing is very popular right now. And I think people think it's tripping that you're high, but you're not high.
You're not. No. That's the thing is there's a lot of a misunderstanding around it. So I would just encourage everyone just to do some research. Like there's been a lot of great articles around that. And Tim Ferriss shares a lot about it. He's a huge supporter as well.
Interesting. Anyway, back to direct insertion advertising.
Sorry. How did we go down that rabbit hole?
I want to do direct insertion psychedelics. Can I do that? Is that okay? Anyway, you may hear that on Twig. And honestly, we're just trying it. It's an experiment. If you hate it, I think it's interesting that you heard that, Sam. And in theory, those are going to be, I think, geo-targeted. But I don't know, since you don't remember the advertiser. And it's not as much as we charge for a host read endorsement ad, obviously. But if it saves a show, I'm all for it. You know. And to be frank, advertising dollars have gotten very tight in COVID. Actually, I want to take a little break. But when we, speaking of ads, but when we come back, I do want to talk about how quarantine is going to change as changing our perspective on a lot of things. And it came to me yesterday because, we bought something at Dick's Sporting Goods, but it was a very different experience. And I'm wondering if that experience is going to continue even after quarantine, but we'll talk about that in just a second. Our show today, brought to you by CashFly, quite literally brought to you by CashFly. They are our CDN, our content delivery network. They've been doing it since 1999. We've been using them since 2000, I'd say since 2007 or 8, a long time. When we first started doing Twit, you know, we were doing the web download and then for that didn't work and we were trying BitTorrent. And Matt Levine at CashFly was so great. He called me up and said, Leo, we can let us help you. And we've been on CashFly ever since. The best experience. And you may not notice it, but you would notice it if we weren't. You know, when you're podcast application downloads our show without a hitch instantly, or when you're going to the website and you can watch that stream when you're, all of that is because of CashFly. CashFly is an amazing global content delivery network. And now even better because they're, so this is a little tricky. If you use a CDN, you'll understand this. The source material for the stuff on the cache servers comes from your origin. And in our case, it's probably Amazon S3 or something like that. That's where the files are. And then when somebody goes to down, that first person to download the podcast goes to a CDN, a CacheFly server somewhere. It downloads a copy, keeps that copy. It's cached there. There's the name, CacheFly, for a while so that people can continue to get it fast. You get it from a server that's near you. It's cached much faster than the origin. The problem is those origin hits can cost us a lot of money. That's why CacheFly has introduced something called 100% Cache Shield. With this feature, you're going to benefit a drastic reduction in data transfer fees with sites like AWS's S3 and other cloud storage origins because your cache hit ratio suddenly gets to 100%. Instead of storing it on these third parties, you store it on CacheFly. So there are you don't have no more cache misses. Your origin spend goes down by thousands a month. This is such a great idea. I wish they'd thought of this years ago. It's so brilliant. With 100% cache shield and CacheFly's guaranteed availability, no more eviction for large one-off requests costing you a fortune in data transfer out fees. It's a next-generation content delivery solution for today and tomorrow. A dedicated storage space just for you. CacheFly just keeps getting better and better. I love CacheFly. Shielding reduces your origin spend. Also make sure that the data will flow. Customers want their 4K content delivered instantly, anytime on any device, anywhere in the world. Your web page should load like that. There's no video buffering. Your game should download. Your app should download. Whenever you're storing content on the net for your customers, you need to have it come in fast. And that's what CacheFly does for us. Lightning fast digital download speeds for large digital files, no matter where your customers are. Their global throughput performance dominance ensures any cache misses are delivered 5 times faster than if you were getting it from S3 or some other origin. I think this is a brilliant idea. One more way CacheFly is amazing. Look, here's the deal. If you host content on the net, and you, whether it's a podcast, music, games, apps, web content, you need to find out what CacheFly can do for you. They can probably save you as much as 20% on your bill. They sure did for us. They could probably speed things up. But here's the way to find out. Go to twit.cachefly.com. They will give you a no-pressure, complimentary, detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and your usage trends. twit.cachefly.com. We thank CacheFly so much for their support. Couldn't do it without you, CacheFly. Lisa wanted a volleyball, net so we could play volleyball and
oh, cool.
Yeah. Right. Cause we can't go outside. So we put it out in the yard and we could have some fun. We're not going to go to the gym. So we could order it on Amazon and it would come. And I think she looked and it would come in a few days or a week. We wanted it today. We wanted it yesterday for the 4th of July, the local sporting goods store. You go online, you order it. They say, okay, it'll be ready in 30 minutes. You drive by. When you do the order, you give them your car, make, and model. So that when you drive up, they go, oh, there's Lisa. They put the volleyball in the car, and she drives off. Now, that's obviously curbside delivery. A lot of restaurants are doing it. A lot of businesses are doing it because of COVID. But after that experience, I thought, you know what? Why would they go back? What if a lot of brick-and-mortar stores, because their one advantage over Amazon, it's not price, it's not convenience, is that you can get it today.
Wasn't that convenience?
Well, yeah, that's the big convenience, yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, convenient in the sense that you just go to the web and you order it. And if you're not in a hurry, getting it in 2 days from Amazon's fine. But what if you wanted it today? I can imagine brick and mortar stores, which are struggling anyway, turning into essentially instant pickup warehouses. And restaurants, too. I wonder, you know, we're getting used to having takeout. I wonder how many restaurants, I mean, we like to socialize. We like to get together. I'm sure you can't wait to have a nice dinner date. But I have a feeling a lot of a lot of businesses are discovering a new form. What do you think? A new form of business.
So, yeah, there was a trend towards flash kitchens before this.
Yes.
Because it was too hard to maintain restaurants. And
it's
just
cheaper.
Like, it didn't make sense
just
financially.
Just do the cooking. Yes.
You just have the kitchen and then people order it. Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I've done the curbside delivery quite a few times now over the last several months, from places like Petco to get dog food and Best Buy and a few other places, as well as some restaurants. And it works. I suspect that a lot of maybe the locations that maybe have lower revenue, lower foot traffic, may shift to doing that, going to a smaller footprint store, where they don't have to have all the inventory out, basically just a smaller warehouse, and do just curbside deliveries. But for a lot of products, there's a lot of times when you actually want to go and browse and
Zoom shirt before you buy it. I understand that.
Exactly. You want to make sure that it matches the color of your
backdrop.
And, that it works for you.
I have to admit though, I did something really weird yesterday. I ordered a suit online. So it's a sponsor of ours was I don't think they're still a sponsor. They used to
From
be a sponsor.
Indochino?
No, there's a lot of them now, aren't there? This was Taylor's store. You put the phone on the ground and it takes pictures of you.
Wow.
And
that's cool.
I've gotten shirts from them, that's fine, but now they have suits, and I thought I need a funeral suit. Okay, this is a little creepy.
Is this for real?
I nobody's dying. But I figure
that you know
I should have a black suit.
Wow.
Don't you think? I mean.
Well, that's just classic and sophisticated.
It's like a little black dress. You got to have a black thing that you can wear. So I would probably wear it at other places besides funerals, but it's probably useful. And I figure if this goes on a lot longer, we might be invited to some funerals. So anyway, I know that's morbid, isn't it?
Well, actually, no, you probably wouldn't. If it's going
that's right. There are no funerals.
Oh, you just need a shirt and a jacket. You wouldn't need pants.
Yeah,
that's right.
You need your Zoom jacket.
My ex-boyfriend showed up at his grandmother's funeral over Zoom in bed wearing nothing.
Oh, no, that's not nice. Grandma would not like that.
Yeah,
I did order a black shirt.
Story-wise, my ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. That is, what? I'm glad you broke up with him because that's weird.
No, he's a good guy. Sorry, no. That was a drag.
No, he was I remember him.
No, do you know? The YouTuber?
Yeah. Is that who you're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We won't name any names. We don't want his ears to turn red. But yeah. So, I know more about you because I follow you on Instagram. Actually, I don't anymore. I killed my Instagram and Facebook account. I know. I said, that's it. I'm done. No more doom scrolling for me.
It's healthy. Lisa follows me. I message Lisa.
Yeah, that's how I keep up with you. Every once in a while. Okay. Now, I know Lisa's watching, so this is not a reflection on her. But I quit Instagram and Facebook, so I don't have to see that stuff. But she's on her phone, and she goes, oh, look, Shira's doing this. Like, this is why I'm not on Instagram and Facebook. But honey, I love that about you.
She keeps you up to date.
She shows me the funny cat videos. This is the final time. Somebody says, how many times is this? It's maybe the third or fourth time I've quit Facebook. But the last time I went back because of COVID and because I thought I want to stay in touch with people. I want to be able to go to my grandma's funeral in bed, stuff like that. And and I got on there and it was so depressing and grim. And I noticed the people around me who are on Facebook. Don't you have this problem, Sheila? Shira got very upset all the time.
What do you mean?
Like you're reading Facebook and now you're upset for the rest of the day.
My Facebook followers are pretty, they're good. I actually have a really good Facebook feed. I must say, I know it sounds weird. Like I get made fun of by my 26-year-old co-host who just jokes around how his mom is on Facebook and I'm on Facebook. But my community there, if I need something, I post it and I get so many great responses.
See, every time I tell, so the same thing with Twitter for me, I hate it. And every time I say that, Stacey says, you just don't know what you're doing. Twitter's wonderful for me. I'm thinking, that's not the Twitter I know.
You just got to follow a lot fewer people.
Maybe that's it.
I quit Facebook 2 years ago and haven't looked back and have no intention of ever going back.
I don't miss it.
I still have Instagram, but, basically I follow corgis. My you know, friends that are into cars and, you know, a few other close friends, and that's it.
What do you think, guys? Should we tell him?
There's no doom scrolling on there. I don't see any doom stuff on Instagram.
Should we tell him that that's not a corgi behind him?
What?
You think you love a corgi? That's a corgi?
No, that's not.
That's, yeah. Yeah, that's a Pembroke corgi.
What is that, one of those tall corgis?
It's a mix.
I guess.
Okay. We couldn't see the legs.
Trust me, Daisy's a corgi.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. Oh, you know what? I macro-dosed earlier today. That's my problem. Facebook is kind of facing some headwinds right now, although Mark Zuckerberg apparently told the staff, don't worry, they'll be back. Advertisers quitting. There's a fairly elaborate Facebook boycott, but you know what? I think Mark probably wasn't prudent or politic of him to say that, but I have a feeling he's right. Right? It's very convenient during summer, during COVID, that Pepsi and Unilever and a bunch of advertisers boycott Facebook. They say till, you know, the end of summer, the end of the year, they'll be back. The North Face, REI, Patagonia, the Verizon, Hershey, Honda, Starbucks, Levi's, Diageo. But they only represent the top 10%, right?
Diageo.
What is that?
It's an ad agency.
Oh, Diageo.
Right? Or no, not an ad agency. They own, I need to look it up.
You can say it, but you don't know what they are.
No.
It's a producer of beer and spirits.
Yeah, beer and spirits. Yeah, they own.
British multinational beverage alcohol company.
Yeah, they own a ton of alcohol brands. Diageo. Bacardi.
Oh, that they own Bacardi?
Let me see. I need to look this up. Sorry.
They own Guinness. Yeah. Here's the danger. Yeah.
Bullet. Sorry, go ahead, Leo.
I want to just try this. They have an AI whiskey selector. What's your whiskey? Now I can do this because I'm over 21, but if you're watching this and you are not over 21, you should stop right now, right? Is that right? How does that work? What is the law there?
Smirnoff, they own.
Smirnoff.
Guinness.
I like that on a bagel.
Anyway.
All right. Now I'm following the Diageo rat hole. Okay. What's your whiskey?
It's called doom scrolling.
Do you like smoked foods? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, I love smoked foods. So maybe a smoky whiskey. Do you like chilies? I love chilies. I'm going to say yes to everything, see what I get. Strong start. Strong start.
Making you want to drink.
This is whatsyourwhiskey.com. Do you like cinnamon apple pie, Cheryl Lazar?
I like that, yeah.
Sure, who doesn't? Sounds great. Do you like dried apricots?
No. They kind of freak me out.
What do you mean freak you out? Like they're out to get you?
Reminds me, no offense, of like when I had like issues going to the bathroom when I was younger.
Okay, I don't want to talk about it. I'm halfway there. I'm getting there. I love fresh ginger. Who doesn't love fresh ginger?
Oh, yeah, fresh ginger.
I'm loving everything. Right. How often I eat bananas? I'm eating one right now. Okay. Fancy scoop of vanilla ice cream. Who would say no to any of this?
How many things are they making you go through? This is taking way too long. Yeah.
Okay, well, we can edit it out. Do you like pina coladas?
Oh, yeah.
How about getting lost in the rain?
I'm hungry now.
Yeah.
You know what I've been really into? Micheladas. Yeah. Like the beer.
What's that?
And I'll show you. Actually, while you're doing this, I'll bring out my michelada.
Okay. After saying I love everything, they're recommending a 12-year-old Lagavulin. Sure. Apparently, I'm right smack dab in the middle, 91% match right there. Woody dried fruits burning. That's my flavor print. Share that on social media. Here's my flavor print. Talisker Lagavulin. They own everything. This company does. All right. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to take you down that alley. So what do you... what's that? Oh, Modelo.
The beer can is kind of messed up. Modelo, yeah. But it has tomato, salt, and lime in it.
Oh, that's... You shouldn't drink that. Now...
It's really good.
Jeez. Are you going to smash it on your forehead after you're done? I want to see that.
No.
Please. So what do you think of my premise that brick and mortar stores will be like this, Sam Ebel-Semin?
There's
a corgi.
First of all,
Okay. Yeah, see, next to a Burmese mountain dog. Sure.
Right, for scale.
Sure.
So you can see how small.
Sure, it looks small. Okay. She looks much smaller with the Burmese mountain dog than she did with your paddleboard.
So, I think what we'll see is a scaling back of a lot of the, say, full service stores, the kinds of stores that traditional stores. Some of those will remain, as places where you can go to check out products in person. And, a lot of them will shift towards this, this model of basically a drive up warehouse, where you show up and they put stuff in your trunk.
And it's I think it's one way that brick and mortar can compete against Amazon, because at least you can get it today. That's no wonder Amazon's working on ways to do that.
And the other thing is we're going to start to see, long before we see robo taxis, we're going to see autonomous vehicles used for deliveries.
Yeah.
Same days, two-hour deliveries, so you don't even have to go there. It'll just go from, a warehouse and come right to you.
So I guess we were headed that way anyway. It's just that the quarantine has sped some of this stuff up, right, Jason?
Yeah. It just accelerated these trends that were already happening in retail. And I think we knew were going to happen. The challenge is with it speeding things up is there was going to be, I think, some natural transition points for this, right? Because there are parts of the retail experience that we don't want to give up. And we've been slowly kind of figuring that out. And it has enabled some companies to stay in business as they're figuring it out. I think the challenge is this is going to be such a shock to the system, right? That it is moving more business, transferring more business to Amazon, right? And so putting more stress on some of those traditional retailers. And so as a result, as consumers, it could give us fewer choices, and it could provide, some challenges that we're not necessarily going to have the opportunity to start to think of, our buying habits in terms of, okay, here's how I want this. And here, I want to be able to go and try on some of these things and then either have them shipped to me or, pick them up at another store or, delivered locally, next day or those kinds of things. And so that's what I worry.
I like going to the store and looking at shirts and touching the fabrics and stuff. We'll see if I like my internet suit. But I feel like, well, for one thing, I'm not going to go to a store and touch fabrics now.
Right now. Yeah.
And I wonder if the experience of the internet suit will be that, this worked great. I didn't need to touch that fabric. It's good enough.
You're going to get used to it. And I think that once you find one brand you really like, you're just going to stick with that brand. They're going to know your measurements.
Exactly.
Can you use LiDAR also to figure out like how big you are everywhere? Like 3D.
I asked Taylor's store about that. Yeah, you could, but they don't need to. It turns out all they need is two pictures, your height and weight. And statistically, they pretty much can get the shirts perfect. We'll see how the suit is. They do send you, and I think I'm going to wear it. They do send you a white canvas sizer suit first, so you can put that on. But I think that's like I'm getting two suits for the price of one.
You're going to wear that. You don't have to send it back.
It's going to be my... No, it's yours. Yours to keep. It's my Zoom suit.
There you go. But someone wrote in the comments, like small businesses, I do think there's going to be a movement to people that don't want to support the Amazons, just like people don't want to support Facebook and that want to go local and that
it'll
also
be...
people that are environmentally friendly that don't want, transportation, that want to just like minimize all of that.
All of that's and very artisanal, and it'll be around, but it's going to be a small fraction of the overall.
During this period, we've been consciously, trying to do more business with, locally owned businesses, whether it's restaurants, getting takeout where we can, or, local hardware stores, opposed to going over to Home Depot or Lowe's, whenever I can, the stuff that I know that they're going to have there. And that's the challenge is, a small locally owned hardware store is never going to have all of the stuff that I would necessarily need to get from a Lowe's or Home Depot. But, when the stuff that I'm confident that they will have there, I'll go over there and get it instead.
It's a social experience to go to the hardware store.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's what I do all the time.
No. Well, sure. So they always say guys don't like shopping. We don't like shopping for clothes, but if you want me to go to the hardware store, I'm in. I'll go. Because it's so what do you think? You think you want a 32-bit auger for that drill or maybe something a little smaller? And they go, oh, yeah, well, you know, let me tell you, what are you going to be hanging there? It depends because you might need a twist clasp to insert it on that and spring loaded. And then you go, oh, well, and that thing, I think that's kind of for guys anyway. And
no, I think that's a bit, it's also women, like there's a huge DIY movement
too. Yeah,
I think
it's cool.
I just don't do that myself. But like I would love to do more of that. It's not my jam.
My favorite, do you know the Instagram account called Miserable Men?
No.
Is it all pictures of guys sitting around in department stores waiting for their wives?
Nailed it.
Oh my God.
I
thought it was going to be men that are taking pictures of their wives or girlfriends, like Instagram husbands.
No. Guys who are stuck in the chair.
In the man chair.
The man chair while their wives shop. This is a new thing. This is the wrong one, maybe.
One of the many reasons I love my wife. She's never made me do that.
This is not the real miserable man. This has only got two.
They're sleeping. Oh, this is so funny.
Yeah. It's miserable_men. And this is our experience going shopping with you, just so you know. It's so sad. But take us to a hardware store and we'll, this guy, he fell. Oh, see, they're not going to let me cause I don't have it. I don't have it. I know. It's so sad. He fell asleep in the China section. Anyway, all right, let me take one more break. Cause I know it's dinner time and Shira is about to pass out.
So, no.
So she's
that is not true.
So what are you going to have what's for dinner? You're going to go down and get.
Oh
go
my
down
God.
To the...
I was going to go and get some actually like veggie burgers of some sort. Yeah. And, although our barbecue isn't working.
Oh no. I have a few extra. I could send you one.
So, I have some work to do still tonight, but I am hungry.
Okay.
So I'm going to
We're going to wrap this up. First though, let me tell you about our great sponsor, Wasabi. This will get you hungrier. And I'm not talking about the little green ball of hot stuff they put next to the sushi, although that would be delicious right about now. I'm talking about something else, hot cloud storage. Wasabi, founded by a good friend of mine, David Friend. He's a serial entrepreneur, brilliant guy. He and his partner came up with a way to write data on a disk sequentially as opposed to in sectors that is much faster and much more efficient. And as a result, he started Carbonite because of that. Now he started Wasabi. It's cloud storage. He's learned a lot about cloud storage over the years. Turns out there are a lot of people, modern times people, who are creating a lot of data. David told me about this. He's in Boston. Wasabi's in Boston. There's this Boston high-rise where they put in security cameras, as one does. But what they realize is those security cameras are spitting out like a terabyte or two of data every day. Day after day after day after day, and they were buying a lot of on-premises storage, like a lot of it. And when they found out about Wasabi, they said, wait a minute, you mean we could buy cloud storage, kind of an infinite amount of cloud storage, for less than the cost of our on-prem? In fact, it's actually significantly cheaper than on-premises storage. It's about the cost of the maintenance fees for the on-prem storage alone, not including the hardware. 80% less expensive than Amazon's S3, but so much better, faster. It's a disruptive price performance model. It just makes cloud storage a natural addition to what you're doing. The cloud is there. Take advantage of it. It's a great deal if you're a managed service provider, if you're reselling storage, because you can earn more while charging less because Wasabi's so much less expensive. But let me, when I say that, I want to tell you about some of the benefits. You're not giving up anything. It's more secure than on-prem storages. They host your data in premier tier 4 data centers, highly secure and fully redundant. They do active integrity check, and every object stored is checked for integrity every 90 days. They're offering 11 nines of durability, so much more than an on-premises hard drive can do. On average, you'd lose one file every 649,000 years. They also are secure. Every bit of data is encrypted at rest, even if you don't request encryption. They follow all the industry best security models and design practices like access control mechanisms, bucket policies, access control lists. My favorite feature I use all the time, your data is immutable. You can say, nobody can mess with this data, not ransomware, not a fumble-fingered employee, not even me. Protects your data from being erased or altered. So it's super secure. That's why it's FINRA compliant, HIPAA compliant, CJIS compliant. Now, it's also very affordable. Flat rate, $5.99 per terabyte per month. You do not pay for egress. That's another thing that bites me with S3 every time. As soon as I want my data back, I have to pay for it. You do not pay for egress with Wasabi. They have the same API as Amazon's S3, but they don't charge for API requests. So you can use all your S3 software, but it's less expensive to use it. And they don't have those fancy complex storage tiers. It's just a flat rate. Although they do have another way to pay they just added, which I love. It's called reserved capacity storage. And this is specifically for like that high rise in Boston that knows we're going to have 4 terabytes a day forever. You can buy cloud storage up front. So if you're thinking about buying more hardware storage, compare the price against, let's say, 5 years of reserved capacity storage. You can actually purchase it in 1, 3, or 5 year increments. The discounts go up the more you buy and for the longer the term. So you're going to get great discounts. You're going to save a ton of money. You're going to have reserved capacity. You just know. I don't know why more people aren't using Wasabi. Everybody knows about Amazon and Google and Microsoft. They're the big names, but please, do yourself a favor. Add a fourth name to your shopping list. Tell the boss. Show the boss the benefits. You can try it yourself for a month free. Go to wasabi.com, click the free trial link, enter the code TWIT. Then join the movement. Migrate your data to the cloud with confidence. I think when you explain the benefits and show the price, it's just a no-brainer. Wasabi's the greatest. These guys really know what they're doing. Next generation cloud storage that's disrupting the industry. Wasabi, WASABI.com. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIT when you do the free trial so that they can know that you saw it here. Wasabi.com. We didn't talk much about the Facebook. Jason is wearing his invisibility. You're wearing your Zoom shirt.
He's getting a Michelada.
Now I want a Michelada. Wow. So it's Modelo beer with...
Well, you could use any beer with either Bloody Mary mix or tomato, salt, some lemon. But my roommate got these for me. They're really big, though. Look at... And I actually somehow drink them.
Oh, I know how you drink them.
I do one at a time. I don't like drink...
No, never drink two beers at a time. It's too hard. You can't...
No, but not like one after the other. Oh, meaning, okay. Like, I could only do one of these, like, that day or night.
Okay. It's better than Budweiser Lime, though, right?
I mean, I'm not typically a beer drinker. I would do a Corona with lime, one.
No,
I'm a
one
beer type of person.
Yeah, no, I know. Microsoft, I want to give them a little credit. They're doing something really cool. They have pledged to, quote, upskill 25 million workers in the COVID economy. And they're going to do it by the end of this year. So there are a lot of people out of work. There are a lot of people unemployed. There are a lot of people delivering food or Amazon packages who really could be doing a lot better. Microsoft has got a really cool free service for you. They've identified 10 jobs that are in the most demand today. And they've got the training. They call them learning paths that you can do online to learn. It's part of the GitHub Learning Lab and Microsoft's LinkedIn Learning, and I think this is really good. They're putting a lot of money into it. $20 million in grants to nonprofits. These are really great. You don't have to have proof that your job is impacted by COVID-19. But if you say it has, there you'll pay $15 for these exams and classes, so which are normally $100.
Good on them.
Isn't that great?
That's really cool.
I want to see more corporate more companies step up, you know, to train underemployed people, to help Black people rise and get better jobs. I mean, there's just so much companies can do. I think Microsoft's really in the forefront of this, and I'm really proud of them. I think that's great.
The extent to which those companies, you know, that they take issues of equity and justice and make it part of their company values and not sort of these things that are less, you know, core to their values and more sort of for like, you know, corporate social responsibility, which is mostly a lot of virtual signaling, unfortunately. The more that they're going to have the opportunity to, one, diversify the voices in the company, which will help them build better products, you know, study after study has shown, but it will also, I think, attract the people that want to support those companies in ways that they haven't totally thought about in the past, right? In terms of how they can draw more people into their customer base, because that's what they're all about. They do obviously have to think about continuing to keep the lights on and those types of things, but there just hasn't been enough of that from Silicon Valley companies, and we've started to see the unfortunate negative consequences of it. So I'd love to see them turn that around.
Sure. Are you familiar with mouth eye?
No, what is that?
You're not. Man, you should start watching What's Trending. I hear it's a great way to keep up.
We cover more like social culture and the YouTube star influencer world.
Well, okay, so this was a thing on Twitter, the eye, mouth, eye. It was actually kind of a joke.
Okay, I see.
You might have seen this on people's Twitters.
When was this? Was this this week?
Yeah, it was last week. Yeah, so it was.
See, even Jason didn't know about this.
Yeah, so the idea was a bunch of tech workers started putting the emojis for an eye, a mouth, and an eye in their tweets and start saying cryptic things about this exciting new, implying it's like an app, the next hot app. In the span of 2 days. They collected 30,000 email addresses from people seeking invitations for early access to iMouthEye. It was 60 mostly young, mostly non-white people working at companies like Facebook, Instagram. I'm reading from the Wired story about it. Twitter and Stripe. They created basically an artificial hype cycle. They dangled a fake public private beta, but then raised $200,000. For the Okra Project, the Innocence Project, the Loveland Foundation.
Oh, I love that. I don't know why I did not see this.
Is that wild? On the other hand, you may love it, but it also, there's people saying that you completely misrepresented.
Yeah, but then they raised money for a good cause, but they had to, you know, say like once they got you in that it's actually going to this. But yeah, that's a bit.
Yeah.
Bad,
yeah. It's great that they, you know, that they took the money and gave it to charity, you know, all for that. But, you know, the fact that 30,000 people signed up for this thing that they had no idea what it's all about
tells you
this
something.
This is exactly what I was talking about earlier. With, you know, you gotta slow down. Don't sign up for every new thing that comes along. Well, it's
they nuts. Created. Yeah. They created. Now it's the website's changed, but they created initially a website that had the eye, mouth, and eye just bouncing around, and then said, "Give us your email address."
That's
now.
Amazing.
Now it says donate and submit your receipt to.
Okay. But that goes back to like Minnesota Freedom Funds. You know, they raised millions of dollars and people were calling them out because they only spent, they disclosed they only spent like $100,000. But they also on the site say they do other things, not just, you know, bailout funds. They also help with immigration and all that. And people were like, what? And all you have to do is read the site.
Yeah.
To figure it out.
Yeah. Here's an example, a tweet from at Hip City Reg. So far, the best term sheet has been 4 at $40 million pre-money. If someone can beat that, let me know. Eye, mouth, eye, implying that they're raising $40 million. Of course, they weren't. There wasn't anything. And then another guy completely in on it said, I'm in for 420 at 69 million pre-money. Send term sheet. And I'll double an anchor. Hit my DMs. Now, a lot of this is joking around about the crazy Silicon Valley culture. They basically, as Wired said, monetized FOMO. In 36 hours, $200,000 for charity, 30,000 email addresses. There were 60 people in the iMouthEye group chat. They were already internet acquaintances. They quickly started adding to the joke, so they kind of made it go viral. I think that's pretty wild.
That's amazing.
I don't know if it's good or bad. It's a statement.
It's the reality.
It's the way
the
reality it is.
Of the world we
yeah.
live in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a weird story I saw in the Wall Street Journal, and it's hitting commerce sites of all sizes. There is somebody going around using the name John Smith and loading up the shopping cart and then abandoning it, which you might say is, well, that's just kind of silly. Here's the lead from the Journal. John Smith started shopping early on a recent Wednesday and didn't stop for days. He visited an auto supply site where he loaded his cart with a replacement turn signal lever, emergency strobe light, and two dozen other items. He hopped over to a home goods merchant for another 10 items, including wood picture frames, address plaques, a towel rack, and mailbox. He ordered one of every kind of baby bundle, ranging from $80 to $500 from a site that sells infant sleeping boxes, popular in Finland, and then walked away. For more than a year, online merchants have been noticing somebody named John Smith doing this, but it's more than a nuisance because it skews the analytics they use to decide where to advertise and what products to sell. He uses bogus email addresses. And they find that out because, as you know, if you abandon a shopping cart, you will get an email saying, hey, you didn't buy it. Can we give you a 10% discount or something like that? And they get those bounced back. It's apparently going around. Anybody know anything about John Smith? Is that you, Jason? I think it's you. You're doing this.
No, I don't have that kind of money.
No, he doesn't spend any money.
I know.
It's more like time. I don't have any of that time.
How is this even reported?
Definitely like don't have.
I don't even get how they even found out about this. It was like random people. People probably do this all the time.
Yeah, but
including when you're bored at home.
Yeah, but apparently these e-commerce people saying, "Hey, this guy's driving me nuts." And eventually, is his name John Smith? Yeah. So,
there's these companies that I forget. There was one. I think it was either an advertiser on Twitter or on some other shows I was listening to. You know that they're specialized in helping website operators, deal with
abandoned shopping carts.
Yeah,
for sure.
You know, figure out how do you fix your site? You know, to get people to go ahead.
That's right.
And so, they may have seen this, this influx of John Smith abandoned shopping carts across multiple sites and started to connect the dots.
Well,
sounds like an IT guy who was in a cart abandonment, division and got fired and is like, what? I'm going to take all these companies. I'm going to ruin the data of every big company I can find.
You're probably right,
Jason. Controlling
all
of them. Yeah.
Well, get ready for this. It was Google.
What
do you mean?
It was Google. he always uses a Gmail address. And Google said that we do spot checking on prices with an automated checker. The mystery shopper, is a bot that Google created, making sure that the all-in price for the... Because, sometimes you have to check out to find the price or
get the real price.
Google
see the price
says
in your shopping cart.
this was in an attempt to get the accurate price for its Google shopping platform or in advertisements. They're sorry. They didn't mean to cause so much consternation or confusion. It was a bot that Google created.
I'm surprised Google didn't create unique names for every time they did it. Instead,
they did. It was a unique, but it was always at Gmail. It was. But you mean like not John Smith?
Yeah, instead of John Smith.
They probably could have done that, huh? That was a poorly programmed bot. Lululemon, have you ever anybody used the mirror? Anybody use the mirror? This is another.
I've seen it.
This is another business that's big in COVID, right? Peloton, mirror, all these things where you work at home.
Last summer, my wife and I were in New York for a few days on vacation, and we were on the subway, and I saw an ad for this thing. What the hell is that? You know, and I looked it up on my phone, and we both thought it was like the most narcissistic thing we'd ever seen. Yeah.
It's a big mirror. You have a trainer in the mirror, pre-recorded. You work out in front of it. It's kind of like I have a Peloton, which I love, which is basically a spin class via the internet, and it monitors all your vitals and stuff like that. Well, you might laugh at it, Sam, but they just got sold to Lululemon for $500 million.
Wow.
It's a $1,500 reflective display. You watch streaming workouts and you watch yourself all at the same time. It's perfect for the 20th century, 21st century.
That's like the average price of a home workout machine. So I see what they're doing, right?
Oh, yeah. We finally quit the gym because our gym just reopened, but they're not making you wear masks. I think that seems like a recipe for disaster. Oh, let's all get together, huff and puff, and see what happens.
Right.
We just quit the gym. I have a Peloton bike. It's probably the same cost as a year gym membership. It's not cheap, but it's roughly the same. And I just, whenever I want, I go in, which means I never use it. I go into the gym and bicycle.
Are you losing weight? I have some friends that have really kept in shape using the Peloton.
Yeah. No, I've gained weight on the Peloton because I never use it. Because
you eat your pizza in the morning.
I eat my pizza in the morning instead of going and Pelotoning. Yeah. I gained the COVID-19, John's saying.
We don't want to shame here. No shaming.
No shame.
Yeah.
No body shaming.
There's actually a new gym that opened up about a mile from us 2 weeks before the shutdown started. We'd been waiting for it to open up. My wife was thinking about joining, and fortunately she didn't go sign up in advance because now there's a good probability that it's never going to reopen.
I feel bad for the Broadway shows that opened a week before quarantine, and now Broadway's announced we're closed the rest of the year.
Yeah, probably through March.
Cirque du Soleil, who owns Blue Man Group, they fired all the people from Blue Man.
They just declared
Group.
Bankruptcy.
Yeah.
They were already in trouble. So it's one of the, I think they got bought by private equity. So we've seen this with a number of businesses, especially retail, that were already struggling, right? This is one of those things that is just, again, accelerating some trends and people that thought they had more runway to some things out and morph their business or find where they had a path forward. It's just kind of evaporating for them right now, sadly.
The a lot of big retail is also going out of business because it's all they do these leveraged buyouts, which means they have no runway at all. And that any economic disaster, especially one that lasts a few months, that's it. It's such crap
and it should be better regulated because in that case, there's so many businesses that are actually solid businesses, things like Toys R Us and others that are solid business. And it's just so badly regulated that the companies go in there, these really parasitic companies buy them.
Sure.
And then they sort of, they carve out their most valuable assets, which is sometimes their real estate and that kind of thing. And then they sort of make the company, rent real estate from them, the company that they used to own the private equity firm.
Yeah.
Exactly, the private equity firm. Thank you. And then when the company, sort of hits a bad bump in the road, they just they get rid of them and all the workers, and then they keep the most valuable assets for themselves. All kind of stuff like that. That's just really dirty.
So, are there going to be a lot of blue people in the unemployment line? I mean, if you're a contortionist or a trapeze artist, times are tough.
LA, half of LA is unemployed. Performers, actors, the entertainment industry.
So sad.
Yeah, it's really challenging.
I feel for, all the restaurants in town are trying as best they can, but you know, they're not hiring servers or cooks. You know, those that are doing takeout, I guess, have cooks, but they say we can't make enough money in takeout to keep a staff. It's very tough.
The hope when I see that is like those people who probably had other passions or things they want, they'll double down in those things or get creative, and then they'll look back. I mean, my hope is this is, you know, me being optimistic, but and glass half full, but like they'll look back and say, oh, if this hadn't happened, I wouldn't have pursued this.
We will survive it, but it is not going to be fun. It is going to be painful for a lot of people.
We're going to have a recession that's going to last a long time, because so many of the, you know, so many of the businesses that had to close during this period are never going to reopen. You know, it's sad. You know, probably half or more of small and medium businesses that closed will never reopen. And, you know, something else will pop up eventually. But, you know, that's going to put a lot of people out of work for a long time.
It's tough. I mean, you know, they always said, oh, you should have a reserve, cash reserve equivalent to 3 months salary, or a business should always have 6 months cash reserve. But as a small business person, I know that's easier said than done. It's not.
Yeah, it's not realistic. Yeah, and then the whole.
Yeah.
Oh, it's sorry.
Go ahead, Shira.
Go ahead.
He was just saying most businesses.
I was going to say the whole thing that the government saying that people are staying on unemployment because it's more than what they're making. All right. So, and I think I mentioned this on this show even, like, then the big thing is, why are wages so low?
Yeah.
If they're lower than unemployment.
It's showing a lot of fractures in our system.
Yes.
A lot of them.
And especially, you know, in the restaurant industry, you know, where so many people that work in restaurants, you know, you think of minimum wage being, you know, $7, $8, $9, $10 an hour, but that doesn't apply to most restaurant workers.
Right.
A lot of restaurant workers, they have a separate minimum wage in most places that is like between two and two fifty an hour, you know, because they assume they're going to get tips.
Yeah.
And, you know, if your restaurant is open just for takeout, you know, you're probably not getting anywhere near those kinds of tips if you're working at all.
Yeah.
Alcohol. Restaurants get a ton of money from the alcohol.
Thank goodness Kanye is going to be our next president, because
he's going to make it all work.
So let's wrap up. Anybody, how many times have you watched Hamilton in the last 48 hours?
Once.
One and a half.
I watch.
Don't have Disney Plus.
Oh, it's worth getting Disney Plus just for Amazon.
I just got it for this. So just, I'm probably gonna
because no free trial for you. $7 a month. But
it's amazing.
It is amazing. I know, Jason, you're a big Hamilton fan. You used to have the poster, sure, didn't you, behind you?
I did. Yeah. I did. So I hate to like admit this because but I did see it with the original cast.
It was amazing.
It was the most powerful like experience I'd had, and really just artistic experience, being in the audience. And I really thought that it was going to be hard. I was looking forward to the movie, but I thought it's going to be hard. Live theater is such a powerful thing, right? That's why they can only do it 1,300 people at a time, because you really do sort of, as an audience member, feel like you sort of have this relationship with the people, you know, on the stage. But they did really terrific job of filming this, because I got things out of it I didn't get, you know, being in the audience.
Yes.
And I thought that it was one of the most powerful things that I'd seen being in the audience. But as a movie, it was actually one of the most enjoyable things that I had seen. It's certainly for live theater on film, which is a really hard thing to do and almost never goes well. I thought it was maybe one of, if not the best version that I'd seen. So they did it well. They did it right.
When we saw it in New York, I took Lisa and Michael, and it was amazing. We saw it 3 months before the movie was filmed. But I have to say, I couldn't cry as loudly as I did yesterday on the couch. Aww. I was bawling my eyes out from beginning to end. In the beginning of joy, because it's such a great work of art. It is perhaps one of the greatest works of art of all time. And to have it preserved on film, I'm so, so grateful. And then, of course, because it's terrifically sad. So I'm happy for the first act, and then I'm just bawling my eyes out for the last act. So, it was really, really good. I've only watched it once, but I'll be watching it again many, many times, I'm sure, because it's so good. We've seen it in New York and San Francisco. But I have to say, you're right, Jason. I think they did a brilliant job of putting it on film. Very challenging thing to do, but they brought it
is. I was concerned about that, and I was pleasantly surprised at how good it was on film and how much it replicated. But not only that, added to some things.
That's right.
That I didn't get.
There's so much going on in the on stage at all times that you miss a lot of it unless you watch it like several times. I think. Although we were close enough, King George comes on. Jonathan Groff was brilliant. And we were close enough when we saw it in New York that he spit on us.
No way. Yeah, really?
It's a very wet performance. And I realize now, and I didn't realize it at the time, he's playing King George as kind of off his rocker a little bit. Like he's like, you know, and I thought, will he be as wet in this movie as he was in the theater? And he was. He actually
see the spit.
It reaffirmed my my memory of the event.
Being spat on.
It's so great to see you guys. So wonderful to have some time together with good friends and have some fun. And I hope I didn't offend anybody. We took a few side trips here and there, but
it's too bad there was no news to talk about.
Yeah. Believe it or not, that's a no news show. That's Sam Ebel Sammet. He joins me on the radio show every Sunday. We didn't do it this week because we took the 4th of July weekend off, but you'll be back next Sunday. And of course, he's got a great podcast of his own called Wheel Bearings. You'll find it at wheelbearings.media. He's also a principal analyst at guidehouseinsights.com, and he's my car guy. Couldn't do it without you. It's great always to talk. We didn't get to talk about what we talked about in the radio show, and I meant to, but we ran out of time. The amazing processor in the new Ford F-150. We'll talk about that another time. There's some.
Yeah, actually, that's not in the F-150. That one's coming to new Mercedes cars.
Oh, now, that's the Mercedes.
Ford's using, that.
The Orin, NVIDIA the Orin processor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still a couple of years from production.
Okay. Oh, good. We got time. Next time you're on. We'll talk about it. Yeah. Fascinating.
And BMW selling heated car seats as a subscription.
Yeah, that kind of blew me away. First, they wanted to charge for Apple, the CarPlay. Now, if you want to keep your car seats heating, they had a VR. They had a VR press event. How'd that? Was that cool?
Yeah. No, not really. they sent out Oculus Go headsets to everybody. To use, and we're supposed to send them back as soon as they tell us where to send them to. But, you know, there was nothing that they did in this VR presentation that wouldn't have been pretty much the same thing, you know, just on a flat screen, you know, in a WebEx or Zoom presentation. And, you know, it was worse because wearing the set of VR goggles, I couldn't take notes. I couldn't record what was going on.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, you know, as a media event, it made no sense at all. And, you know, I've talked to them and they said they'll probably never do that again. It was, you know, they tried something. It didn't work, you know. Their cars are all now, they all have, all their new cars have over-the-air update capability like Tesla does, and a lot of other manufacturers are going that direction. And they're looking at new business models for, you know, to allow customers to pay for stuff, you know, if they don't want it all the time, you know, if you only want to pay for your heated seats in the wintertime and not pay for it in the summertime.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's
weird. You know, they're going to adapt that to different markets. So, you know, in the US, they're probably not going to do that. They may, you know, they're going to experiment with it and see how.
So the idea would be instead of paying for it up front, you pay for it as you go.
Exactly.
I guess that's not
basically
such a bad
an in-app
idea.
Purchase.
Yeah.
But then what if I just like one day have someone in my car and I'm like, oh, my ass is cold. I want it. Oh, I need to go in.
You got
to
call them up.
You just go in the screen and, you know,
turn it
say,
on.
You know, okay, I want my heated seats on now.
See, it's on-demand heated butt.
Yeah.
They've got to take some chances because they're getting
We call that ODHB.
By,
it's good.
They're getting crushed by Tesla in that part of the market. They're
going to be the first to use this.
BMW sells 2.5 million cars a year. Tesla sold 370,000 last year.
Wow.
So I wouldn't say they're getting crushed by anybody yet.
You're right. That was an overstatement. But some of the most lucrative parts of their market, they're losing business to Tesla in some areas that's very concerning to them, is maybe more fair way to say it.
And that's why that's why everybody's transitioning their technology to adopt the same kinds of things that Tesla is doing.
I am excited about the Apple phone being my car key. Is that a good thing, you think, Sam?
Oh God!
Yeah. Actually,
lose your phone, lose your car.
There are cars now that already offer NFC car keys, but they do it through Android phones. Hyundai does it, Tesla does it.
But
the reason it only works with Android phones is because Android allows developers to have access to the NFC chip in ways that Apple doesn't.
Yeah.
Apple's building it directly into the OS, which in theory should make it a little more secure. But you can get it already now. You can go buy a new Hyundai Sonata right now has that feature.
Can you do the sharing? Because one of the neat things I thought about the Apple thing is I could then I could say, Shira, here's the key to my car.
You can send a digital key to a friend.
Oh, actually, that's smart.
Yeah.
My phone always dies, though.
I know. It would be no good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You couldn't get in your car. No, I'm sure they have a way to get in without the car.
And the next stage is going to be ultra wideband, like what we saw demoed at CES with NXP. They're working on that.
That's cool.
And the new Volkswagen Golf that's on sale in Europe now already has ultra wideband built into it. They're using ultra wideband for the key fobs. And as soon as the standard is complete for the digital key for the phones, then they'll enable that as well.
It'll be a lot more secure than the current key fobs, which are fairly easy to hijack and steal the car.
Oh, yeah. So.
Thank you for being here, Sam. I'm glad we were able to get that in. I forgot I meant to ask you about that as well. Jason Heiner, it's so great to have you. He is always a joy to be with. Jason, of course, editorial director at CNET. He's at Jason Heiner. Anything you got going on? You got anything you want to plug?
I just wanted to say, thanks for letting me be in the Zoom where it happens.
I want to be in the Zoom where it happens, happens. I love it.
No, thanks for letting me be here. Always a pleasure. Shira, great to see you again. And always fun.
And don't forget to catch Jason's interview with Dr. Benjamin. That should be a must watch, and her book Race After Technology. That's at cnet.com.
Yes, please. Actually, this week too, coming up, interview with on technology and where we go from here with Sal Khan from Khan Academy.
Nice.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
Nice. That'll be really good. And that's Shira Lazar, who is giving me an academy and how to be with it all the time. I feel much more peaceful. It's always good. It's good. Really always a pleasure to see you, Shira. Peaceinside.live. Where's your radio show?
Yes, on radio.com. It's either as a podcast, just search Let's Go There, or Channel Q Radio on radio.com. And we're live 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific weekdays.
We are Channel Q. Yeah.
Yes, there
Let's
we go.
Let's go there. Let's go there. I love
it.
Monday through
Catch
Friday,
up on the news
4 to 7 p.m. Pacific. And that's streaming everywhere. Anyone can listen on
radio.com.
radio.com.
We're also actually in 36 markets on the radio on HD2 and AM.
Aren't you
and
awesome?
And FM in some places. But go to radio.com since a lot of us aren't in our cars or have access to HD2.
Yeah. Very nice. Thank you, Shira. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We appreciate you spending some time with us. We do a twit every Sunday afternoon, even on a holiday weekend. This is the only thing I had. I actually had a little mini vacation. I didn't do anything Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I did this Sunday. I get tomorrow off. It's weird.
Jealous.
Well, I can't go anywhere, so I sit on the back deck.
I don't care. I love hanging out at home.
I know. It's not so bad, actually. Not having anything to do. It's not so bad.
It could be worse.
Yeah. I will be back Tuesday with iOS Today, Mac Break Weekly, and Security Now. Our regular schedule gets back. Thank you all for being here. We do Twit Sunday afternoons, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 2130 UTC. If you want to join us live, you can watch the stream of us making the show, basically. We're going to cut out all the digressions, so you're going to miss all the good parts.
That's what you always say.
Yeah, I never cut anything out because Hey, it's all good. Twit.tv/live, audio and video streams. If you're doing that, you should be in the chat room. That's a great bunch of people. 24/7, there's somebody in there hanging out, talking mostly about tech, but a variety of things. It's family-friendly, well-moderated. We have great mods. That's at irc.twit.tv. Of course, all the shows we do at Twit are available on demand, both at our website, twit.tv, also on YouTube. And by all means, subscribe. Get your favorite podcast app, Pocket Casts or Overcast or Slacker, Stacker, Stitcher, whatever. Get your favorite and subscribe. That way you'll have it available to you every Monday morning as you head for your commute from the kitchen to the living room. It's a short commute. If you just listen during the commute, you'll get about 4 years worth of show. Just every 10 seconds at a time. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Amazing.
Happy 4th.